Alex Jones is back. The info war continues at alexjoneslive.com. And you can follow us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at The Alex Jones Show Live. Plus, you can download the app, alexjonesapp.com. So check it out now and let the deep state globalists know we will never be silenced.
Do not get this ad. Do not support the broadcast. Support Mondami.
Hello, Alex.
Have you told people what you got caught doing?
I returned the hat, sir. I did.
Bigley only sent us two of these. I stole one. I've been wearing it. I wore it in today, and I said, Harrison, I noticed there was a hat in here. It's missing. I said, did you take it? And Harrison said, yes, sir, I cannot lie. That's how coveted these are at thealexjonesstore.com. That you may have it. Actually, I have Bigley sending us more. I designed, you like it.
I love it.
No, actually,
and in fact,
everybody takes the stuff they said of it after we've shown it. But the point is, this is very coveted.
It's very cool.
It does fund the operation. I just want you to tell a story about your covetedness. This is, I present it to you.
I really did. Thank you very much.
You deserve it. You didn't actually steal it.
Well, thank you.
But I did. The point is, I knew when it was gone, you had to have it.
I did check.
You have to have it and fund our operation if you want us to expand. We love you.
I did check. I made sure there were two because I didn't want to take the only one.
But see, I wanted one.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well,
I had to steal one.
And actually, as soon as I got home, my son saw it and was like, are those guns on that hat? I said, yeah. So now
I've already told Bigley, mail us more.
All right. Well, folks. You can be like us.
I just came in to be this wasn't planned. I'm being silly. You're kicking ass, by the way.
Thank you.
There's some badass 250th anniversary stuff. I said it's all limited edition. Some of this stuff's too good. It's not limited edition.
It'll last forever. But look.
I don't know why everybody loves it. I wore that out in public this week. I got like 10 comments.
It is a very cool hat. I don't know what it is either. It's classic. It's simple. Yeah, very simple. Got the two musket design. It's very high quality. The stitching is real. It's not just like a patch. That's all you can actually see here. If the crew can go to
dot cam.
Please, I get to talk more about this hat. You can actually see. I mean, you can see the stitching on the other side. It's not just a patch on top.
You want your son wants that?
He took it. Yeah. My 5-year-old. My 5-year-old is wearing it as we speak.
That's like an ad out of that though.
It's very cool. It's a very cool hat. And look, folks. You're going to be the stylish person at the 4th of July barbecue. That's all I'm saying. I want to see these hats seared with fireworks because of irresponsible celebration during July 4th. But I wasn't lying, folks. I really did take that. I did do it surreptitiously, though. On Friday afternoon, I picked the hat off the shelf and I looked around. And I said, okay, there's still a hat there, so I'm not taking the last one. And I left with it on my head.
I wasn't
secretive.
I just caught you, American. No, you were like.
Exactly.
Mine. Caught your kid. Do not get this hat. Do not support the broadcast. Support Mondami.
Support Mondami. That's right. Get the hat, folks. You can get the hat today. I think it's on discount, even though we could sell out of this thing without giving any discount at full price. And like I said, folks, I mean, pretty much any store you go in these days, whether it's a little local, you know, kitsch store, or you go in Walmart or Target or wherever, they almost all have a big display with their merchandise for America's 250th. They're doing it because they think they can make some money off you. We're doing it because this is our driving force. This is our life. This is what we've dedicated ourselves to. The 250th anniversary to us is not just, you know, oh, let's rotate out the seasonal merchandise, you know, get rid of the pool stuff, move in the patriotic stuff. No, this is our lifeblood. This is what we truly believe. This is who we are. And if it's who you are too, you can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. And it depends on where you live, but you may still be able to get those delivered by July 4th so you can have it in time for the big 250th celebration.
A war. It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at alexjoneslive.com.
I'll start with sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex.
This is rocket fuel. This is incredible. This is rocket fuel. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is a cocktail I drink every day. A squirt of ultramethylene blue and T3. You are insane if you don't get it.
Okay.
Well, listen. You are insane if you don't get it. I am a wrecking ball. I am obsessed with this. I can't stop. And now I'm having this. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is the truth. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. Do you understand that? Does that burn into your brain?
I think I'm going to buy some methylene blue now.
DallasShow.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, the 30th of June, 2026. Coming to you live from the Alex Jones Network studios here in Austin, Texas. Big show today. We're going to be joined by Criston T. Harris in the next hour. He's going to help break down what has been uncovered at the MK Ultra hearings, including the fact that it may not have ended after all. I don't know if anybody would be shocked at that. This happens kind of regularly. There'll be some outrage. There'll be something like the church hearings where the intelligence agency is forced to come out and admit all of its misdeeds. And they come out. They present the proof. Yes, we've been drugging people without their permission. Yes, we routinely kidnap innocent people and subject them to torture. Yes, this has gone on for decades and has been funded by drug money that we're using to also buy weapons to foment revolutions around the world. And the Congress says, well, you're not supposed to do any of that. And they say, oh, really? Whoops. Our bad. Sorry about that. And that's the end of the story. And then it's over. There's never any punishment. There's never any oversight that's actually has teeth. Like Congress doesn't actually do anything. And even when they learn that for decades, the intelligence agencies have essentially been rogue and acting on their own volition, they don't actually do anything to correct that. They don't actually end any of the programs. They just sort of admit what they've been doing and then they just keep doing it. Why wouldn't they? Again, the lesson we're learning over and over again is like human behavior is guided by incentives, negative and positive. And if you can commit insane crimes and get away with it, people tend to do that. They tend to do it until they no longer get away with it, and then they stop. I don't know why this is so difficult to wrap our heads around, but there you go. So Criston T. Harris will be joining me in the next hour to talk about. Again, he's been watching the hearings about MKUltra this whole time. And then in the third hour, I'll be joined by Peter Brimelow, the great Peter Brimelow, founder of VDARE, about Supreme Court decision about birthright citizenship. I'm a little bit torn about this, not about the decision. It's obviously bad and wrong. But about how much anger and fury I should feel about it. Because on one hand, this is the absolute destruction of our country. This is like the final nail in the coffin. This was one final opportunity to have some semblance of sanity injected into our system. And the most outrageous and nonsensical manipulations, malformations, just misattribution. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. But like the 14th Amendment's one of the worst because it was clearly written to cover specific people for specific reasons that has been completely destroyed and like extrapolated out to actually mean a whole bunch of stuff it never meant. But this is it. Like this is the final, this was our final chance to just like put a stop to that. And the ladies of the court decided otherwise. rather unfortunate. It's the end of our country, more or less. That being said, are you surprised? Are you surprised? We've gone over this ad nauseum. Of course, other people have had endless debates about this forever. And the thing is, like so much stuff that we'll cover today, like none of this is really an opinion, a point of view. Like if we can just deal with the cold, hard facts, I don't understand why everybody is so wrong about everything. Like it's not up for debate. It's not really a matter of opinion or interpretation. Things like the 14th Amendment, the people that wrote it explicitly said that it wasn't just for any random person to come across the border and plop a baby out. It was just obviously never supposed to be that. There's no reason why it would be that. So it's just another one of these things where it's like, if this isn't on purpose, then I need an alternative explanation for what's going on here. How can everybody be so wrong all the time? How is that even possible? It doesn't even make sense. And you have to understand, you have to eventually come to terms with the fact that they understand perfectly and they're just attacking you, right? The people who are promoting the 14th Amendment as if birthright citizenship was ever supposed to be a thing, like they're just lying to you. They know that this was never intended to be like this, but they benefit from it, so they want it to continue. They're just lying to you. Unless you can explain to me, like unless you can show me that there's some sort of amoeba that's gotten into everybody's brain and makes them all retarded, like I have to assume that this is on purpose because it is. The misapprehension, the confusion, the just suicidal stupidity of our fellow Americans, it is inexplicable outside of deliberate deception. That's my take on the whole thing, honestly. So again, I don't know, you know, I'm mad, but it's like, what else did you expect? What did you expect? That there would be just common sense, obvious, easy, unburdened solution to all of this? Of course there is. Be if the Supreme Court decided the other way. Again, you know, just we went over it yesterday as well, but just routinely we're, you know, reintroduced to this reality that everything that's wrong in our country would be extremely easy to fix. And the strange thing is that we imbue certain just very common sense, simple, routine activities of the government. For some reason, we've been indoctrinated into like imbuing it with bias or offense or some negative attribute that doesn't even exist there and wouldn't if we didn't inject it. In other words, there is absolutely nothing about citizenship, right? About the concept of citizenship that is overly exclusionary or biased or racist. It just has nothing to do with any of that. The point I'm trying to make is like, what is the damage done by saying no to people that want to come in your country and become citizens by popping out a baby? Like, you're not hurting anybody. You're not taking anything away from anybody. We have something that's ours. Somebody else asked for it. We say no. Well, what's the problem? What's the big deal? Who's getting hurt by that? Nobody. This is what I mean. It's just something that is absolutely normal that every other government does. Every single other government in the world does not have birthright citizenship. It's an insane concept that doesn't make any sense. So why can't we do it also? Like, it's crazy. And it just, there's like this weird assumption that by not just surrendering the minute that our enemies demand it, we are somehow hurting them. We're somehow causing problems for innocent people, and the government just has to, you know, allowed to have, it's just beyond crazy. It is beyond crazy, but it's typical. And it's like, what else did you expect? Everything the United States government does is on the face of it retarded. I'm sorry to keep using that word, but they keep doing the stuff. So I have to describe it accurately. I'd say the same thing about the war in Iran or deportation, like any of this stuff. We are simply watching as a cabal of psychopaths uses our system to destroy us. It's nothing more sophisticated or complicated than that. Why people allow it is a whole nother can of worms, but that's all that this is. Let's go to, we'll go to MKUltra in just a second, but let's go to clip number 15 here. This is Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and his response to the Supreme Court's decision to do away with, well, or to rather to keep and preserve and continue the utterly insane, absurd, nonsense, country-destroying bullcrap called birthright citizenship. Here's Ron DeSantis.
Temporary authority for Florida to suspend certain restrictions while allowing the legislature to review long-term policy decisions. Additionally, this legislation prohibits pre-planned adoption agreements and surrogacy contracts involving citizens or residents of foreign countries of concern. China ships people here for birth. They do, sir. It's really a seedy thing, and I'm glad that we were able to do that. I know we're hoping that the Supreme Court is going to interpret the 14th Amendment so that we can put a stop to some of the people that are coming here for a month, having birth, and then going back to China. That's part of an operation. Why would we let that happen and grant citizenship under those circumstances? Bill also creates enhanced criminal penalties for crimes committed to benefit foreign governments or foreign-owned terrorist organizations. As I mentioned, charitable organizations. It prohibits those organizations from accepting contribution or support from designated terrorist organizations.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, he asked the same question I do. Just like, why would we allow this? What are we doing? The birth tourism thing is very real. There's at least 500 companies, like entire, it's like an industry, 500 companies in China alone that do this. And it's a very good question. It's not a meaningless one. Why would we allow this? That's the question. Why would we maintain a loophole in our laws that are taken advantage of at an industrial level? If a Chinese person can travel 30 minutes on a flight to an island in Guam, just off the coast of China, have a baby there, and then return to China 2 days later, that baby is legally as American as you or I. That baby, once it grows up, can vote, can move here and be treated as if they are a loyal American citizen. And there are companies that advertise this service. So in China, they will take Chinese people to a little island off the coast of China, let them give birth, and they pay for that privilege because they receive an American citizenship in return. Why would we allow that? Why would we allow that? Because we do. And that is what the Supreme Court today decided to allow. They looked at that and they said, look, if we stop these Chinese communists from using this obvious loophole to game our system and get American citizenship despite absolutely no loyalty, history, heritage, or anything remotely American about them, if we stop that, they won't be able to make money anymore. Like, what is the reason you wouldn't stop it? Who are you hurting? What rights is the government infringing on if you stop a bunch of Chinese people for selling American citizenship through a loophole? There's no defense of this. This doesn't make any sense. This doesn't make any sense. Of course, one of the frustrating parts about the newer crop of Supreme Court justices is their utter lack of professionalism. We now have official Supreme Court decisions saying things like this. Instead, to the majority, the power-hungry actors are ... wait for it, ... the district courts. What the hell are you doing, lady? Here's a quick quiz question. In case you hadn't seen this post before, in case you hadn't looked into this, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. Who do you think it was? Which Supreme Court justice do you think it was that included a ... parentheses, wait for it, parentheses, ... millennial humor injection into their epoch history defining legal decision? Who do you think it was? Was it Clarence Thomas who said this? Was it, I mean, of course it was Ketanji Brown Jackson. Of course it was Ketanji Brown Jackson. And this was in addition to, she used some other TikTok slang in her decision. She's like, we understood the assignment. It's just like, if only the founding fathers could see us now, they would want a flamethrower. They would ask us about this new flamethrower technology that could do such wonderful things for us. And I don't know what else there, you know, again, like what else there is to say about it. Like, what are you supposed to say? What are you supposed to say? They wrote the 14th Amendment to give citizenship to freed slaves, as well as the extraordinary circumstance where somebody who has lived in America for 20 years and has no loyalty or citizenship in any other country, but would like to participate in American life at a time when there was still effectively slaves in America. Remember, this was written, the 14th Amendment, at a time when Chinese people, unpaid laborers, were building railroads and then being shipped back to China once the work was done. So it's just one of these things. You know how it feels? It almost feels like when you're watching a ball game, and this doesn't happen as much anymore because they have so many reviews, but when you just have to watch the refs make the worst call ever, and it's not debatable. It's not like, well, gosh, the ball hit the glove right as the foot hit the base and it was a hairline. I mean, your guess is as good as mine. No, this is like the player steps on the base, stands on the base for a couple seconds, then the guy catches the ball, and then the umpire says out. And it's just like that. This is just wrong. There's no debating it. There's no nuance about the rules. You're just wrong about this. But they're the umpire. The problem is that this isn't a game. This is the existence of our nation in the balance. This is precedent for law that will dictate the course of our nation for all of time. So it's a little bit more than frustrating. It's a little bit more than just, wow, that guy was obviously out of bounds, but the ref is clearly favoring him. This is, I can't even explain how ridiculous all this is. But like, that's how it feels to me, is that type of thing where it's not like, oh, was he offsides? I don't know. Well, he kind of jumped first and, well, he jumped quickly after. So maybe, you know, false start, that sort of thing. No. This is literally, you watch the replay. There's no ambiguity about it. The guy, it's like, okay, all right, but we just got to sit here and let the umpires be like, you know, actually the 14th Amendment does apply to everybody and birth tourism is fine and citizenship means absolutely nothing, actually. Great. I mean, you're wrong. It's not really even a question. You are just absolutely objectively wrong about this. But they're the umpires, so them being wrong makes it the way it is from here on out. Of course, we have a few, maybe just one Supreme Court justice that still understands things. We'll go to clip 17 here. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas fumes at the majority upholding birthright citizenship for illegals, saying the 14th Amendment was clearly made for freed slaves. Let's watch.
Progressivism seeks to replace the basic premises of the Declaration of Independence, and hence our form of government. It holds that our rights and our dignities come not from God, but from government. It requires of the people a subservience and weakness incompatible with a constitution premised on the transcendent origin of our rights.
Those are some big words, Mr. Thomas. That was some complicated political philosophy you're getting into. Would you mind spicing it up with some TikTok phrases? Ketanji Brown Jackson is having trouble keeping focus. Would you mind blaring techno music behind your talking? That would really help us to understand what you're discussing here. Have you given any thought, Mr. Thomas, into how it makes women feel, though? I know you're talking about the transcendent values of our underlying philosophical motive, but have you considered that it makes ladies sad? Have you thought about that? Have you considered that it's going to make some people kind of angry at us? And sure, those people are foreigners who hate us anyway, but have you considered the sadness that this is going to create in the minds of the people that we're really, really looking forward to taking advantage of that loophole in our laws to get in through the back door? Is that something you've even considered once? Donald J. Trump says, I would like to congratulate President Xi and the great country of China on their massive birthright citizenship win. President Donald J. Trump. Yeah, I mean, it is certainly a big victory for them. Absolutely. Again, I really don't know what else there is to say about any of this. I have trouble, I just want to reiterate over and over again that there's just no legitimacy to any of the claims from the other side, and yet they seem to win every single time. And again, none of this is speculative. None of this requires you to believe anything that you can't prove absolutely with your own eyes in your own mind. And I'm talking about just everything. The 14th Amendment being written to allow illegal immigrants to drop babies. That was just never the case. It's never supposed to be the case, but that's what it is now. When it comes to Anthony Fauci lying about the COVID origins and covering it up, it's not speculation. It is absolutely proven, not just beyond a reasonable doubt, beyond any doubt. It is as confirmed as the existence of the virus itself. It is incontrovertible. We talk about the lack of security when it comes to mail-in ballots. It's not an opinion. It is impossible to ever have a secure election with the existence of mail-in ballots. Every one of these things, it's like there's two sides, but there really aren't. There's the side of truth and there's the lie. These are not two sides. These are not two opinions on the same topic. One is true and one is a lie. One is real and one is fake. And the fake lies always win every time because it's on purpose.
Years ago, I said, I want something that supercharges methylene blue.
Yes.
I want something that gives people natural clean energy without stimulants. And you got together with top formulators and created Methyl Drive and Power Plant. They can individually be taken,
yes,
or they can be stacked together with Methylene Blue. You understand all the science. I always butcher all the names. I don't explain how these are the perfect formulas.
Sure.
I've had top formulators say, who made these formulas? These are the best. These are available at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds our operation. You develop these with top formulators. These are great, already best-selling products without me even promoting them. Tell us about Power Plant and Methyl Drive right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we've got hundreds of thousands of people that have taken Ultramethylene Blue since we started selling it on the alexjonesstore.com. This is an incredible product. This is a super powerful metabolic ingredient. Methylene Blue's structure, you have nitrogen, 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 sulfur, chlorine. The chlorine is what gives it its dye properties. That's why it's used as a medical dye, medical grade, what we have. The sulfur donates an electron to your mitochondrial process. So what that means is it speeds it up through the Krebs cycle to what makes where it makes more energy. And the energy that it makes more efficiently. So you get less waste product, more energy, more ATP. That's why it's a super powerful nootropic.
It skips something in the mitochondria.
It skips the oxidization process in the cells. It skips through the Krebs cycle from stage one into stage four, oxidative phosphorylation. Nothing else does this.
That's the ultimate antioxidant.
The ultimate antioxidant. That's Ultramethylene Blue. Now, the key to human health, this is what's being discovered, is mitochondrial health, right? 20th century, they try to treat symptoms and keep you alive. 21st century, it's all the people you watched on Rogan over the years proven to be correct. It's about the mitochondria. It's about cell division. It's about senescent cells and their waste products that they make. Methyl Drive, there's that iconic ad of you, Dad, where you go, the CoQ10, the PQQ. That is what this is. CoQ10, PQQ, magnesium, and then methylcobalamin, the ultimate vitamin B12 in the bioavailable form. That's all together in Methyl Drive. It's about protecting your mitochondria. We've got tons of ingredients in there to do that in Methyl Drive. With Power Plant as well, people report this almost universally with the Methylene Blue. Incredible energy, incredible resilience, incredible endurance. What I wanted to create with Power Plant, we kind of have the ultimate cellular engine thing in Methyl Drive. With Power Plant, this is kind of the men and women can both take it. It's like a unisex super male vitality, where you have things in here like the cordyceps mushroom that boosts oxygen carrying capacity and ATP, which is also phenomenal for the mitochondria, plus the Rhodiola rosea, also known as Viking root or golden root. But even more so than that, it lowers your cortisol. And when you lower your cortisol, studies have shown that your testosterone increases because they're made from the same building block, which is cholesterol. Of course, that's why ashwagandha is so incredible. You saw that product as well. It takes the fuel source for making cortisol into making testosterone. Since they're both hormones, we got zinc in here as well to raise testosterone, help with healthy testosterone, selenium to do the same thing. And then we've got the boron, which is so underrated.
Nobody ever talks about that.
No one ever talks about boron. You can look at all these different male vitality supplements. If you're a wife out there, you want to get something for your husband, Power Plant, Adaptogen Complex, we got Methyl Drive. These really are made to be taken in tandem. This is a trifecta. Yeah, this is the Mac Daddy stack. Okay, you want to be a Mac Daddy, you buy Power Plant, Methyl Drive, and Methylene Blue. Okay.
We have the Power Plant bundle discounted. Power Plant, yes. Methyl Drive, and Methylene Blue together right now at thealexjonesstore.com. It really is amazing, and it funds the operation. You're going to be addicted if you get it.
You guys really need to get this. If you're looking for a physical improvement, a mental improvement, that Power Plant formula combined with the Methyl Drive and the Methylene Blue, but any one of these taken separately, if you're older and you get the Methyl Drive, you are going to love this product. If you're younger and you're big into exercise, you're going to love the Power Plant. I'm really impressed with this. I'm thankful Bigly let me develop these products. Nobody has taken this and given me a bad review. Nobody has taken this and given me a bad review. And combined together with the Methylene Blue, it's a deal that's too good to be true.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I'm rereading a very important book right now that I've talked about a lot on the show, but I was inspired by Benjamin Netanyahu giving a speech. I believe it was the speech to the Jewish news syndicate, and he invokes the phrase, rise and kill first. It's a quote from the Talmud, and it's actually like a prehistorical, not prehistorical, but an ancient form of the castle doctrine. If you actually read the part of the Talmud, it's, and the Talmud is a collection of legal discussions between proto-lawyers, whatever, you know, whatever they called lawyers back then. But they're discussing the application of law. And basically what it says is if somebody's breaking into your home, it's safe to assume that they don't have your best interests in mind and that that could lead to a deadly struggle. And so you don't have to wait till somebody tries to kill you to kill them. If they're breaking into your house, you can kill them, right? It's just, it's what I agree with. It's an ancient version of the castle doctrine. Now that has been extrapolated out to basically mean anybody that could in the future potentially ever pose a threat to you in any way, you are therefore not just allowed, but kind of obligated to kill them. And that's crazy. But rise and kill first, and I'll connect this to everything we're talking about today, and this isn't just an anti-Israel thing. It's actually kind of a pro-Israel thing, to be honest with you. Not really. I mean, it's a deeply anti-Israel. You'll see what I mean. But I'm studying this book and reviewing it again, rereading it for the first time in a couple years. And I'm doing episodes on it for NXR Studios Off Limits News. You can find it on YouTube. I already did the first episode, sort of the introduction to the foundation of the State of Israel. Because one thing, when you read the Rise and Kill First book, it is a history of the targeted killing program that Israel runs. And they basically have been run their entire time, their entire existence. Every leader, every prime minister, more or less, has gotten their start as a literal assassin, either planning or actively carrying out. Ehud Barak dressed up like a woman and went in and, you know, helped kill a bunch of the Palestinians in Beirut. He, of course, became the prime minister later and good friends with Jeffrey Epstein. What you start to understand is that there's a nucleus of power in the intelligence agencies that actually runs the world. And they're in a lot of ways unstoppable. But the reason I was just thinking about this is obviously you have various bills being put forward, various aspects of the NDAA, like what the American people care about. We want people deported. There's a lot of very simple demands that we keep making over and over. They keep getting ignored. While our representatives, the people ostensibly there to represent our interest, you just suddenly come up with this stuff. And it's passed before you even know it. And it's not like it's helping anybody, but somebody is writing these laws. Somebody is coming up with this stuff, and then they're leaning on the Congress people and getting them to push it out. And they never have to actually make the argument as to why they want the thing passed. They never have to actually have any scrutiny into what their motives are. There's never a debate about how beneficial it would actually be to Americans. It just passes. Things like the Kids Act, where clearly this is just in line with the censorship and surveillance programs going into place all over the Western world, anywhere that white diaspora exists, including Europe. America, you would think, would be a little bit protected from this due to our constitutional and, you know, our character of loving free speech and valuing it above just about everything. But no, it's happening here too. It's happening in a slightly different form, but it's all of the same programs that one would need to spy on or censor dissidents. And it's just sort of happening behind the scenes. So when I'm reading Rise and Kill First, you have this core group of communist, extremist, radical revolutionaries from Russia who move to Israel. And they form something called Bar Giora, which is like the first sort of like proto-army in the 1907, right? So these are literal communist revolutionaries that like tried to do a revolution in Russia in 1905. It didn't work. They were driven out of the country. They all go to Palestine and start committing terrorism there. Bar Giora becomes Hashomer. Hashomer becomes Haganah. Haganah splits off into the Irgun and the Lehi terrorist groups. And it goes on and on and on, right? And eventually you get to where they are now. And every prime minister and every, you know, defense minister, they all get their start in these targeted killing programs. So why am I saying all this? I'm going on a little bit of a ramble here. But the point of it is, throughout the book, in fact, time and again, every other aspect of Israeli society tries to stop them and fails. Multiple times. At one point, Mossad is obsessed with killing Yasser Arafat. And they realize that he flies commercial sometimes. So they put in a plan and actually start carrying out operations to down a commercial airliner over the ocean in a spot where it'd be too deep to recover airplane parts, so they would ideally get away with it, be able to blame the airline going down on some mechanical malfunction when really it would be shot out of the sky by F-16s. Five different times, the Mossad higher up gave the order to down a commercial airline, and five different times, the underlings, the grunts in Mossad or Shin Bet or, you know, working this operation, stopped the operation going forward by sabotaging it. Five different times, the underling regular, you know, Israeli soldiers had to pretend to mess up and, oh, I didn't quite hear you. What was that? Oh, shoot, it's too late now. We have to cancel it. Five different times, they tried to down a commercial airliner. Five different times, it was the regular Jewish-Israeli grunt soldier disobeying orders that stopped that from happening. At another point, there was another big scandal. I believe in this case it was that Palestinian hijackers who hijacked a bus were taken off alive and well by the IDF, only to be beaten to death a few minutes later around the corner. And they were caught, and a journalist was there and took a picture of it and was able to hide the film before the IDF saw him. So it came out that, yeah, in fact, the IDF carried out, you know, executions there on the spot with two Palestinians who had surrendered. So this became a big scandal. And it threatened to, you know, expose that, yeah, this was not a rogue IDF agent. These Palestinians weren't beaten to death by an angry mob of civilians. It was an order. It was an order from on high, and it was in line with how they carry themselves. It never actually was investigated. It never actually came to light, all of this stuff. Why? Because the intelligence organizations who ordered the Palestinians beaten to death compiled what they called the Skull dossier that laid out dozens, if not hundreds, of war crimes and murders that the Israeli state had participated in, including the prime minister and the defense minister and the very people that were leading the charge to try to, you know, get justice for these two Palestinians that were murdered. The intelligence agencies come out and go, do you really want this exposed? Because you've also participated in a few massacres. All of you have. All of you have participated in very egregious crimes against humanity, and that would all come out if you tried to punish us. So again, time and again, and I mean, it is a constant thing. Ariel Sharon was another one where it's like, according to the accounts, the entire Israeli government is like desperately wants peace, but the one guy in charge who happens to have spent his entire career in the targeted killing program is able to keep the war going and start the chaos. And I mean, it's story after story that's just so indicative of what we see in our everyday life. I mean, there's one point where Israel really wants to go into Lebanon to kill the Palestinians there. But America says, well, we're not going to back any invasion into Lebanon if there's not a really good reason, if there's not a really good attack by Palestine first. So if Palestine attacks you, then we'll, you know, back a incursion into Lebanon. So what does Israel do? Of course, they start carrying out terror bombings against Palestinians, trying to get the Palestinians to attack Israel to try to get the justification to start the war that they actually want and are carrying out clandestinely, but really want to do in a full force sort of way. And the way they do this is the Israelis create an organization in Lebanon called the something like, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it's like the Lebanese Organization Against Foreign Occupation. And it's like, so you're telling me a bunch of Israelis bombed the PLO under the guise of Lebanese people wanting to get rid of foreigners. So foreigners in Lebanon disguised themselves as the Front Against Foreigners in Lebanon to bomb Palestinians, to get them to bomb Israel so Israel can invade Lebanon. And it's just like relentless. It's relentless. And it's all being driven by this like tiny, tiny, tiny group of people. There's like six people that are just responsible for the entire war, for every targeted killing. And it's Ariel Sharon and Benjamin Netanyahu and Yitzhak Rabin. I mean, it's all of them, but it's a very small core of people. And it's just fascinating because as you read the book, it just very clearly illustrates how an entire state can be controlled and manipulated by one little tiny cabal, as long as that little tiny cabal has the ability to assassinate people and the ability to collect blackmail, they're in charge and they get to dictate the way things go. So all of this is extremely important in understanding the effect MK Ultra has had, why the intelligence agencies here or in Israel or anywhere else have been able to get away with what they've been able to get away with for so long. And like, really, when you understand that that's actually what we're dealing with, what we're actually fighting against is not, you know, in total, it's not just a bunch of stupid people with bad ideas. It's a very small core of hyper-motivated psychopaths who are dictating our reality to us. And we have to stop believing them, stop listening to them, stop fearing them, and destroy them. And so when you look at what's going on in America, like even the MK Ultra crap coming out now, just understand it's the same situation here. The world is run by people that are not elected, whose motives are totally hidden and obscure, and even if they eventually come out, nothing's ever done about it. And when you understand that that's what's actually happening, it simultaneously is like, okay, well, then we should be able to defeat this. Okay, if there's this big controversy about Israel going into Lebanon, but then you look at like who's actually making the decisions, and it's like the Knesset was against it, the Israeli people were against it, the soldiers on the ground were against it. Even according to the intelligence people, like, they were a lot of times more liberal on the idea of Palestine. But the one guy that's the prime minister of Israel, he wants the war, so it's happening. And it's like, okay, so it's this one guy and like his little group of assassins and murderers. And they're the ones dictating all of this to the rest of us and then, you know, playing it up as if, you know, they have to do it and they're making the hard decisions that nobody else is capable of making. And everybody plays along with it for some reason. That's how they get away with it for so long. But on one hand, it's like, okay, so it's just these couple of guys. Literally, it's like a couple dozen people doing all of this, controlling all of this, manipulating all of this. That is a very simple problem to solve. It's only a couple dozen people. But then the flip side of that is, and this has been going on since 1905, 1907, it was in this sort of, you know, cabal of, again, like crazy leftist, socialist, communist revolutionaries. They serve as the, like, original node, the original seed of the force, the organization, whatever you want to call it, that currently runs the world. If you want to know why all of these things happen and why all these decisions get made that just have no bearing on the well-being of the people or strategic value whatsoever, it's because the entire world is in thrall to this cabal of psychopath murderer gangsters. And it has been for a long time, and it still is to this day. So again, as we listen to MK Ultra, you know, be laid out, to understand, it's a lot bigger than they're even saying it is. And these decisions made to violate the most important laws that we have protecting people from, like, not just like abuse from the government. I don't know. There's one thing if you're a radical that's calling to overthrow the government and they, you know, arrest you for speech, you know, you can debate that. Now, this is them just like picking up random people, chaining them to a table and force feeding them enormous amounts of LSD until they go insane. Like, this, it's crazy what our government has done to our own people. And it's always predicated on this fear and hysteria that we're all going to die if we don't do this. That's the other thing you see from Rise and Kill First, is there is a constant hum of frantic panic. Just all the time. It's just like, we have to kill him. We have to kill him right now. We can't wait. And so, of course, you know, it's the interesting thing about reading Rise and Kill First is they mess up about 90% of the time. So 90% of the times their assassinations totally fail. It's hugely embarrassing. It's totally backwards. The 10% of the time that they actually kill the person that they're trying to kill it always has negative effects anyway. And on practically every single assassination, they go, you know, it probably would have been better if we just didn't do this at the end of the day. Yeah, we killed the guy, but all this other crazy stuff happened as a consequence. But it just doesn't matter. They just keep doing it over and over. They just keep getting away with it. So, you know, long story short, to summarize everything I've been saying here, our government, our governments around the world, the citizen representatives that we elect to serve our interest, simply don't. It's not, not complicated, not sophisticated. They don't. Whose interest do they serve? They serve the interest of a very small and very ruthless cabal of psychopaths who run the world from the intelligence agencies. The intelligence agencies, I remind you, that were born from the banks who established the international communication networks that were more sophisticated, more accurate, and faster than the state apparatuses or, you know, intelligence services. That's who's running the world. That's who's making these decisions. This is not a matter of half the country being insane, the other half not being insane. This is a matter of half the country being fooled by a bunch of psychopaths who are deliberately tricking them to their own ends, and the other half of the country who are trying to warn about this or just are against the thing they're doing anyway but can't identify where it's coming from. We'll identify where it's coming from. It's coming from inside the house. It's the intelligence agencies that they are currently trying to officially merge between Israel and America, which would just be codifying what already exists in an unofficial capacity. Let's go now to clip 42. This is the intro speech to one of the main witnesses at the MKUltra hearing today. We'll play a few more clips on the other side, and then I'll be joined by Kristan T. Harris, who's watched the whole thing and give us a breakdown of what's been exposed. But first, here's an opening statement about the purpose and practice of the MKUltra programs out of the CIA.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. Let me begin by expressing my gratitude to this task force for confronting the enormous issue of overclassification of government documents and the culture of secrecy that enables it. I'm especially gratified by your interest in MKUltra, the project the CIA carried out through the 1950s in an attempt to find the secret of mind control. MKUltra was one of the most secret government programs in American history. The chemist who directed it, Sidney Gottlieb, lived in total anonymity. My book, Poisoner in Chief, may be the most complete account of MKUltra that exists in public, but I'm painfully aware that I have discovered only a small portion of what MKUltra was and what Sidney Gottlieb did. In 1951, the CIA hired Gottlieb and directed him to launch what became MKUltra. Gottlieb believed that in order to find a way to implant a new mind into someone's brain, you first had to find a way to destroy the mind that was in there already. In its search for ways to destroy a human mind and body, MKUltra conducted the most extreme experiments on human beings that have ever been carried out by a U.S. government agency. By any standard, they qualify as medical torture. These experiments took place in prisons, clinics, and safe houses in the United States, in Europe, in Asia, and even in Latin America. Officers of MKUltra were authorized to travel to foreign countries, preferably those under formal or informal U.S. occupation, and ask the local CIA station to provide them with expendables, human beings who would not be missed if they disappeared. Gottlieb had what amounted to a license to kill issued by the U.S. government. Neither the number of MKUltra victims nor the number of those who were experimented to death is known. Gottlieb, as a result of this license to kill, might have been the most powerful unknown American of the 20th century. Some information about MKUltra spilled out during the 1970s, but senior CIA officers had intentionally let Gottlieb operate without supervision, so they were able to claim that they knew nothing about his excesses. This was a way for the CIA to deny its institutional role in MKUltra and to portray it misleadingly as the product of one man's sadism or excessive zeal. Investigating MKUltra is challenging because when Gottlieb and his mentor Richard Helms left the CIA in 1973, they illegally ordered that its records be destroyed. Soon afterwards, under DCI Stansfield Turner, a CIA analyst, as you pointed out, Madam Chairman, discovered a cache of MKUltra documents hidden among financial records. Turner credited that analyst with doing a very diligent job of Sherlock Holmesing. That same diligence, I believe, could bring results today. One of the great mysteries of MKUltra has to do with the death in 1953 of an MKUltra scientist, Frank Olson, who had announced his intention to quit the project. His plunge from a New York hotel room was described in the press as the suicide of an Army scientist. He was not an Army scientist. He worked for the CIA. And evidence suggests that his death may have not have been a suicide. So there could be hidden documents that could illuminate this case. I would also point out that in addition to searching for unknown documents, this committee could do a tremendous service by simply asking for the end of redactions on the documents that we now have. There are reams of documents about MKUltra that have heavy sections redacted. In the 1970s, this was justified by the argument that it had only been 20 years since these terrible things had happened and revealing details might affect national security. Now 70 years have passed. That argument can no longer be valid. So I would urge this committee to try to fill out all the blank spaces in the documents that we have, because we know that is there. This task force could also consider trying to determine whether some new incarnation of MKUltra exists today. When the main phase of MKUltra drew to a close in the early 1960s, Sidney Gottlieb concluded that it had failed. That in fact there is no such thing as mind control. Even if he was right, however, he may have been right only at that time. In the many decades since then, there have been enormous advances in cyber technology, in artificial intelligence, in neuroscience. Covert agencies may have access now to tools for mind control that Sidney Gottlieb could not even have imagined. It may well have been true in 1963 that mind control is a myth, but whether it's still true is uncertain. And that question of whether mind control might now be possible under our new circumstances is something that has presumably occurred to scientists who work for secret services, including our own.
Of course, it's still going on now. We'll break down all that we've learned from the MKUltra hearings on the other side. Stay with us, AlexJonesLive.com.
Hi, folks. Doc Bigley here. And today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ, calcifies your pineal gland, and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are. But don't despair. We found a solution. Follow me. I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs. Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy. Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
With the new water filter system from the AlexJonesStore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Thank you, Chair Lady. Thank you all for being here. I remembered when all the talk about MK Ultra broke, and then they were talking about lawsuits, and there were lawsuits, and the CIA and the federal government said that this didn't exist, and then they came back and said, well, it does exist, and then, but we're not doing it anymore. I guess my question to y'all first is, which lie do we believe? Because... Thank you. Obviously, there was an open bar before this thing started, so thank y'all. But Dr. Kinzer? Hit your mic, brother. You're not on the mic. It's an old CIA trick. I'm just kidding.
I put myself in the place of one of those senior CIA officers, and I'm thinking to myself like the ones back in the 1950s. Well, other people must be doing this. We'd be falling behind if we don't do it. And nobody's looking over our shoulders. And that, I think, is your job. So I think there is a definite air of urgency and total secrecy. If any current research is going on, and if it's conducted in any comparable level of secrecy to the original MK Ultra, it's very deeply secret.
But one thing you said, though, it's going to be hard for Congress to act when they're so dadgum compromised.
Operation Paperclip brought over 1,600 German scientists into the United States government after World War II, including individuals who had conducted human experimentation in concentration.
All right, folks, we're going to pick that up on the other side. I realized these clips were too good. I was going to play like three clips back to back from the hearing, but I realized they're kind of too good just to let play like that. So again, you've got the MK Ultra hearings that happened today. Luna announced hearing on MK Ultra experience and its impact on public trust. This from oversight.house.gov. Task Force on the Declassification of Federal Secrets Chairwoman Anna Paulina Luna today announced a hearing on mind control and accountability, uncovering the truth of CIA's MK Ultra experiments. During the hearing, members will examine the history and timeline of the Central Intelligence Agency's MK Ultra project and its original classification and how the project meets the CIA's obligation to protect the United States. Members will also analyze the intelligence community's unwillingness to declassify information related to MKUltra and how the lack of transparency has reduced Americans' trust in government institutions. The intelligence community has covered up the nature and classification of the MKUltra experiments for decades. Americans have been misdirected repeatedly and deserve transparency and accountability from the CIA. The intelligence community's unwillingness to deliver the truth has fueled dangerous conspiracy theories and eroded public trust in the federal government. This being headed by Chairwoman Anna Paulina Luna. So again, will there be any changes from this? Like Representative Burchett was just laying out there. They've lied about this forever and they've gotten away with it. And they keep lying about it. Now they're lying about the lying about it. The question is, is our civilian representation actually above the CIA or not? This is about more than just uncovering some old program that stopped in the 70s. First of all, it probably didn't stop, and that's one of the major headlines out of this committee, is that it almost certainly didn't stop and is still operating in one form or another today, which obviously, I mean, they weren't made to stop, so they're not going to stop. But this is about more than that. This is about whether or not our representatives, the people who actually have to answer to the American people, whether they are the ones in charge or if the unaccountable, unknown spy masters are in fact above the law, are not subject to review or oversight by anybody with any public accountability. Functionally, they are. Up to this point, they have never been held to account. The only way that Congress could hold them to account would be by restricting their budgets, which is why in the 1960s they started selling drugs across the world to a massive degree, leading to the Iran-Contra scandal. But if Congress doesn't assert their supremacy and bring the CIA to heel, then it will be official. Like, we actually don't control our government. It's this cabal of intelligence agencies that actually do. That is how it works. These hearings are exposing that to everybody.
Now in the 21st century, it's time to stand up and realize that we should not allow ourselves to be crammed into this rat maze. We should not submit to dehumanization. The 21st century is going to be a new century. Not the century of slavery. Not the century of lies, issues of no significance, and classism, and statism, and all the rest of the modes of control. It's going to be the age of humankind standing up for something pure, something right.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man.
I want freedom! That's what I want! And that's what you should want!
You're listening to Alex Jones.
The truth is out there in front of you, but they lay out this buffet of lies. I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to take a bite out of it!
AlexJonesLive.com. Tomorrow's news today.
Yes, folks, it's a brave new world we're entering into. Concepts like mind control and mind-controlled assassins, the MKUltra program, things that used to be the reserve of conspiracy theorists in the dark corners of the internet are now simply well-known and acknowledged by pretty much everybody. It really is an astonishing change that has occurred in my lifetime. A time when even in college, even in my 20s, all the way up to almost my 30s, people still refused to acknowledge this stuff. They still had never heard about it. And if you told them about it, it was like they were mentally incapable of even understanding the words you were saying. But now it's all coming out. And I have to say, I'm a bit gratified. I'm very happy with the new media landscape and the awareness that's out there. I mean, it's a regular occurrence, and I'm sure you experience it too. You're watching YouTube or something about something totally unrelated to politics or anything else, and people just casually mention, like the MKUltra experiments where they, tested on human test subjects illegally in the, 70s, and then they just continue on. It's like, so this is just like common knowledge now. So you're no longer the over-informed weirdo for talking about MKUltra. Amazing. Isn't that wonderful? Boy, there's a lot more. But actually, all that means is that what people are aware of now is the tip of the iceberg, the liminal surface of the bottomless pit of government corruption, manipulation, secret societies, secret programs, unknown scientific testing on entire populations, mind control not just on individuals but entire population bases through news media as well as entertainment. These things are still very real. And they have not stopped. So awareness is the first step. The next step is putting that awareness into action. Information in formation. Do you understand? Do you get where I'm going with this? But of course, I think, and I'm not taking any credit here, but I'd be willing to bet if it was possible, if you had some sort of omniscient force that could tell you the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, Alex Jones has played the single biggest role in changing the media landscape as we know it. The primary reason that things like MKUltra or the Monarch program or like any of this stuff is well known is because Alex Jones forced it into the conversation. He took a bullhorn, took a microphone, you assisted him. And we have shattered the Overton window and exposed all of this. So that's the first step. Now it's time to get the show on the road to actually stop this stuff, to actually put the criminals in prison and actually use the remnant of our power as American citizens to get the right people into office who will actually take control of this nonsense rather than simply go along with what the intelligence agencies want. And we're getting closer to that reality. You can support us in this mission, of course, by going to thealexjonesstore.com. And like always, we give you not just the information you need to know the attacks that you're under, but also the supplements or the water filters or anything else that you need to combat it. So right now, the big sale is actually like two big sales running simultaneously. The start of summer kickoff sale is still on. Major new deals on our best products, but each deal is only available for a limited time. Right now, if you get bovine colostrum plus, you get a second one absolutely free. So buy one, get one free for bovine colostrum plus. If you buy one zeolite detox, you get a second one 50% off. So that's buy one, get one 50% off for the zeolite detox and defense. The third sale also starts simultaneously with that second sale. If you buy one Shilajit complex capsules, you get a second one absolutely free. And if you buy one ultimate life force, you get a second one of those 50% off. This deal ends Thursday, July 2nd at midnight. So don't waste time. Go today. And help us to carry on the next stage of this operation. Awareness has been achieved. Now it's time to put that into action. And with that, I'm very happy to welcome my guest, Criston T. Harris. You, of course, know him well as a fill-in guest for me here whenever I can't make the show. I'm always very happy to know that we've got somebody like Criston T. Harris who I can just say, hey, you've got the show today, and know he's going to do a fantastic job. Welcome to the show once again, sir.
Harrison, thanks for bringing me on a topic that I'm well investigated on, that I have a lot of experience with. And I'm even working on a documentary right now in the early stages on MKUltra. I've had a chance to interview at least four alleged victims and survivors. And it blows my mind that, Congress can't find any survivors to come talk at these hearings, but they sure got some journalists out there that have done some of their research. And we even had one person from the NIH who seemed to be completely ambivalent and have no clue what's going on whatsoever, except for they wanted to talk about COVID and how well the NIH is doing for society and how great the NIH is. It seemed like they just hired an empty suit to go there, and hey, they needed somebody to attend. And of course, Dr. Elizabeth Genexi was there to just go ahead and say the NIH is great. I'm not here to talk about MKUltra. I understand that's what this meeting's about, but I'm going to be completely useless for a whole 2 hours. So yeah, it was really interesting.
That was really weird. I was confused because I saw those clips and I'm like, wait, what hearing is this? Because they're not talking about MKUltra. That was very weird. So they sent somebody from the NIH just to be there and talk about COVID, even though that wasn't what the hearing was about. Like, what happened there?
Well, so she's an expert on, she's a psychologist, a social psychologist. And I'm assuming that she was there to kind of debunk these conversations, but she really didn't say anything. She just went to bat for the NIH every time they asked her a question. Oh, the NIH is great. The NIH never did anything wrong. Anthony Fauci is God. But I'm just paraphrasing, you know.
right, of course.
I don't know anything about MKUltra. I never heard about it, but I'm here. I didn't do any research for my job. You know, they probably paid me to be here, probably thousands of dollars. But, you know, I'm going to just drop the ball and just show up after I eat breakfast. It was kind of the most rubber stamp witness I've ever seen, rubber stamp person, and they probably needed somebody to show, and they grabbed someone who didn't even work at NIH anymore or any longer. She was just an expert psychologist, and probably was there to analyze the situation. However, they also had Boston Globe columnist Stephen Kinzer there, as well as investigative reporter Tom O'Neill, who wrote a book on Manson. And I think between the three, it was very interesting. Stephen Kinzer seemed to be the most, I would say, knowledgeable on the subject from the research I've been doing. And in some shapes and forms, we got a lot of verification on the things that we've heard and the things that were claimed by whistleblowers in the past, people who suggested that, Charles Manson was an MKUltra student, which it's funny because the guy who handled him was directly involved and was at the same military complex as the heads of the MKUltra organization. We had the whole interesting aspect of things with Jolly West, who inserted himself into the Jack Ruby case in trial. So Like the whole assassination or killing of Lee Harvey Oswald is linked somehow oddly to potential or potentially linked to MK Ultra.
Yeah.
And there's a whole lot to unpack here.
It's weird when you start looking into these really famous criminal cases in America. It's more often than not you find a connection to intelligence. Obviously, Charles Manson was operating at the same time the Jonestown cult was happening in San Francisco. There were some very close connections to MK Ultra there because MK Ultra, you know, the way it got access to a lot of its test subjects would be doing things like running nursing homes or running, you know, free clinics for people. They would, you know, disguise themselves as medical intervention in order to find people to test on. And Jim Jones actually ran clinics that MK Ultra was using to find targets. So all of this stuff is very deeply intertwined, and it's sort of the unspoken undercurrent of, like, you know, 21st century or 20th century popular culture. And I got a couple of videos that talk about that. Let's go to clip number 9 here. These are two people you just mentioned, Jack Ruby and Charles Manson. I'll get your comments on the other side. This is from the hearing earlier today. Let's watch.
Is it in your expert opinion that Jack Ruby and Manson were assets of the intelligence agencies specifically pertaining to MKUltra? Were they MKUltra victims?
Yeah, theoretically Manson, I've never been able to prove absolutely. Jack Ruby, I believe, this is something else. The Warren Commission investigation, on the Warren Commission was Alan Dulles, the former CIA director, who authorized and ran MKUltra until he was fired by President Kennedy. The liaison to the committee for the CIA, who handled the information coming from the CIA back and forth to the Warren Commission, was Richard Helms, who was a direct supervisor of Jolly West. They knew who West was. They knew that what West was capable of and what they had paid him to do and what he had reported to them that he could do, including inducing mental disorders in people. That was never disclosed to the commission as far as anyone knows. So I believe that West was put in there to keep Jack Ruby from telling his story.
Wow. In closing, I just want to thank you all for being here today. And we will be following up, Dr. Kinzer, on your request to fully redact.
So again, these are two of the most important historical events in the last 100 years, the murder of John F. Kennedy Jr. and the, you know, Manson massacre. You know, again, it sort of just entered into our cultural understanding. You know, we all just sort of grew up knowing about this. But certainly if you go back and watch documentaries, I mean, this was a traumatic event that, like, massively altered the consciousness of America because of the brutality, because of the just the weirdness of it all, the drugs, the hippie culture. I mean, these are two incredibly important events in recent American history, and they've both got MKUltra CIA fingerprints all over them. Your take, Kristan?
Well, it's no secret that Charles Manson, when he violated his parole, he was issued a handler, and that handler was Roger Smith. And it's just coincidence that Roger Smith worked at the same research facility as Jolly West.
Oh, well, there you go.
It's quite simple. It's not hard to that's right there. You can go look for yourself. It's very interesting. And a lot of it, like you mentioned earlier, stems from San Francisco. And San Francisco is the origin points of Operation Midnight Climax. And for those that don't know what Operation Midnight Climax is, that was one of the origin points of the blackmail, sex trafficking style operation. They paid prostitutes $100 back then. That's equivalent to $1,300 in today's money. $100 to get stooges to come into a safe house, and they would perform sexual acts with them, but then they would drug them mostly with LSD and other things, while people in a two-way mirror, government officials in a two-way mirror, would watch and observe, and they would have hidden cameras. And it was also used to find out if they could program individuals, if they could get information from individuals, and if they could blackmail individuals. Sounds a lot like the Jeffrey Epstein story or the P. Diddy story. It seems like a continuation of, the Franklin controversy or the Finders cult, which is all suspicious and under questions and maybe linked. There's no doubt in my mind that when the Finders cult ended in 92, they claimed they were bringing the children to a special camp in New Mexico for gifted children. And then in 92, the Finders cult ended. Jeffrey Epstein bought Zorro Ranch in 1992. It's a coincidence. Might not be the same location, but I'm just telling you that I have questions and I'm kind of curious on what the answers might be. So I think that a lot of this is linked. San Francisco is where they started the whole Operation Midnight Climax. It was also they had brothels all over the United States. There was over they claim there's only 149 official segments of the MKUltra umbrella. But when you talk to a lot of people that were involved in other things like the Monarch program you mentioned, which is the Theta programming, you know, they really had 162 is what a lot of people are suggesting. But officially, it's 149. So there's a whole bunch of different aspects of this whole MK Ultra hearings. They barely touched the tip of the iceberg because they didn't get into the GATE program, which involves, you know, remote viewing and psychic abilities, which, you know, it's an interesting documentary that's coming out called about psychic assassins. You mentioned, mind control assassins. Very similar. That's a lot what the GATE program is about. But the most important takeaway I think a lot of people don't know about is MK Naomi. MK Naomi is the military's version of MK Ultra. And Sidney Gottlieb, who was given the charge of this, who was in charge of Operation Artichoke, which is where they get the good cop, bad cop, psychological warfare, testing on how to assassinate people. All of that was part of MK Naomi, you know, contaminating bugs with diseases to see if they could help spread them. You know, ice darts, all that interesting stuff stems from MK Naomi and the assassination program, which is the Omega programming. If you understand the MK Ultra programming, the whole idea is destroying the character of a person, breaking down their identity, making them forget who that is, and programming a new one behind a, you know, some kind of firewall that they could bring out by command or by code word and help them forget it. And as you heard throughout this trial, you know, you could literally send a person and talk to them and bring out this ulterior personality, tell them information that is top secret, and then you could switch them back to their other personality, personality A, and then they'd go to a person and they'd say the keyword and personality B would come out, remember the top secret information and share it, and then they would switch them back to personality A with the secret code. So there's so many different uses that they had for MK Ultra, and the alphas were usually the people that they identified as assassin, you know, people that could be assassins, could go out and kill people, and some people had multiple personalities installed. And since they didn't have any victims, they had mostly investigators. They talked about the books that they were writing because they're probably trying to sell some books, you know, on top of it. But we didn't get a lot of the in-depth information. We got a lot of stuff that was on the surface, some things that we got confirmation on. And you're right. Alex Jones has changed the conversation. He has really brought attention to a lot of these details. And we got to give credit to other people like William Cooper, who was out before him talking about a lot of these top secret projects. But Alex Jones had the megaphone, had the ability to amplify it. And now the argument is what are these programs? It isn't whether or not they existed. It's arguing with people of whether or not Jeffrey Epstein was a pedophile because they support, you know, the conservative viewpoints or whatever it might be. So it's really great that this is pushed into the major conversation. But we're seeing the government trying to do damage control and really try to pervert the real story. And like you said, they're still lying about what MK Ultra is, where it went. There was no mention about ritual abuse, of satanic ritual abuse, but they did mention that people could be killed. And what's interesting, when I interviewed Chris Latrier, a Montauk boy, he told me that the children he knew in his elementary school that was part of the MK Ultra program just disappeared and never came back, and that the often payoff back in the 60s and 70s was around $130,000 if a family lost a kid because they knew that was part of the risk of putting their kids in the program. So I think a lot of these witnesses don't want to talk because they get 401k, they get money, they got paid off, and they're not saying a word about MK Ultra. But as we found out in the trial, there's tens of thousands of survivors and victims of these programs. That's a lot of people. And I can tell you a lot of them are not dead. And there's a lot of them that probably would like to speak. And I'm here to do that. So if they want to ever reach out to Cristante Harris, they can, but just search The Rundown Live, find me on Twitter or on social media.
And of course, the weird thing about it is, do you even know you're a subject? I mean, when you're talking about the ability to create split personalities or hide information inside someone's brain, I mean, you could be a victim and not even know it, you know, not to freak anybody out, but it, you know, makes it hard to know how many victims there even are. If the victims themselves might not even know that they're victims, it's absolutely crazy. And can you stay with us the whole hour, Criston?
Because
there's a lot to get into here. And we only have a few minutes left here. But, you know, everything that you're talking about, it sounds very sophisticated. It sounds very sci-fi. It sounds very woo-woo. At the end of the day, it's basically hypnotism and trauma-based mind control, right? Can you just talk about sort of the human brain functionality that's being hijacked by these programs, by these, I don't know, operations they're running?
Well, according to the victims that I've talked to, the operation involves a lot of programming involving the younger the age, the better. So these are youth. These are children, usually under the age of 8. So 6, 5, 4. One of the individuals said he was selected because he liked the idea of Star Wars. Chris Latour was talking about at a young age, the first thing he did in school on his first day of MK Ultra is they gave him what was very close to a VR Game Boy goggle, which showed devastation, death, murder, pornography in multiple different colors, kaleidoscoping nonstop while he was being programmed as a young children to take away any of his sense of like morality. And so at some point they break you down, they torture you, they starve you, they bring you near death, they give you drugs. Every morning, Chris Latour said that he got a drip of LSD put on his tongue when he went by his parents on his way to school because that was part of the regime. And so when he was there, they kind of break it down. And he went into some more crazy things such as cannibalism and child abuse and murder that he had to partake in with his class in order to be part of this project of MK Ultra. That was just one example. That were different.
Well, just stopping there. Why do you think that is? Like, can you not do mind control and have flowers and puppies? Like, well, why is it, do you think, that it has to be married to like this brutality, the sex, the like, what is it, do you think, about the human brain that's the way you hijack it?
Well, I think it's the trauma. It builds, it's like when a wound heals, there's a scar. So you build up a trauma barrier that separates your personalities. And they like to identify people who are bipolar or also already have multiple personalities because they're most susceptible to these kinds of programming, this kind of, discussion of trying to be able to get them to do whatever you want. If they're afraid for their life and they know that you have unlimited power, this is the government we're talking about, and that they've seen people in their own class die, as you know, in the MKUltra here, as they said, did people die? And they're like, well, yeah, they could have died, you know, Sidney Gottlieb had been given the power of God. If people died, so what? There is no accountability. So if people die, you're afraid for your life, you're being tortured to near death situations. Well, that's how they programmed you. And often they would bring out like a gift or a code word and say that you're a good boy. And because you were tortured, here is your reward. You've been rewarded. And they start building that program so that in the future, when they start developing these personalities, somebody could bring out a ring or an amulet or a code word and you automatically switch personalities.
And the way these things are connected, if I understand it, and maybe this is a it's too simplistic, but basically it's a hijacking of your flight or fight response. And when you cannot run and you cannot fight, your brain sort of malfunctions and it wants to do those things so badly that it sort of like blocks off the memory because it can't react in the way that it wants to. So when you're talking about, you know, the torture, the near-death experiences, that's what's happening. And of course, as we studied with Jonestown, you know, a lot of these techniques were actually created and studied in cult settings where they would punish the cult members by isolating them. And it turns out you isolate somebody in silence for a couple days, they're your puppet. They'll do whatever you say. It's crazy, but very simple psychological hijacking. More with Criston Key Harris on the other side. Stay with us.
There are billions of ways for people to be culturally, spiritually politically, environmentally engaged. And there are millions and millions of different programs and podcasts and radio shows and things around the world out of the 10 billion people on this planet. But on the record, what we've done at InfoWars, and this is just the second leg of that at alexjoneslive.com, has changed the world. Our guests, our callers, our researchers, our reporters, and my overall futuristic analysis and view of the destiny of humanity, which I don't claim to be 100% accurate, but it's definitely proven to be a good template to observe the world, has had a giant effect, and the globalists do not like it. So when you share that local AM and FM station that you listen to and tell those you share it with to share it, it changes the world. When you say this is a forbidden information at alexjoneslive.com that has the free audio and video feeds and archives and shows and articles, you are literally going in the face of the censors and the tyrants. You're changing the world. It seems simple. It seems little, but it's not, because we have millions of listeners and viewers. And if we can leverage that out to millions more and have them leverage it out, that creates the chain reaction. And all the great guests and hosts we've had on over the years who were already great, successful, they'll tell you how much more their shows blew up once they were on air here with this operation. We are here to get the next generation, black, white, old, young, to awaken to the epic time that we're all alive in right now and to take action. So your word of mouth is key, your prayer for the broadcast is key, and supporting us financially is so key. And we make it symbiotic, where everything you get at thealexjonesstore.com will empower you, will enrich you, and will be an adventure. The Patriot Apparel, some of the best designs ever, limited edition for the 250th anniversary of the United States of America, are out right now. Right now, ladies and gentlemen. And this latest design, these limited edition, America, red, white, and blue on Sterling Royal Blue, 76, America 76, 250 years. That is a really cool shirt. I think it's going to be a bestseller. It just came out today. And all the other 250th anniversary limited edition shirts are available right now as well at thealexjonesstore.com. So be sure and check those out. I thank you for your support. But wearing these out in public, meeting like-minded people, spreading the word, it's an adventure in and of itself, and it funds this operation, which is exposing the next pandemic, the next attempted lockdowns, the next big globalist war. You are financing your own future for a better future and better destiny when you keep this broadcast on the air. But you can also experience the info war on the ground wearing these great shirts. Also, we have the new dual carbon platinum gravity fed filter, the highest quality gravity fed carbon filters that are the highest rated, cutting out all of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of horrible forever chemicals that are out there. And it has the highest quality stainless steel. Nobody has got a filter with better filtration. It's the highest rated, and nobody has as beautiful a filter as this, and ours is way under the price of competitors that are crap. This is the best. It's a home run by Bigley, our sponsor. We're so proud of it. Here's the issue. 1,000 of these came in. It sold out in 3 days. They got a couple thousand more coming in like late next week. Those are pre-order right now. They're going to be sold out soon, and then I'm going to stop promoting it until they get even more in, because I don't like doing pre-order. But if you want to be at the head of the line to get these while you still can, and not have to wait a month or so after that, get your order in now, right now, at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're on the site, check out all the other great Patriot apparel, the super high-quality, military-grade belts, all the great supplements and more at thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, alexjoneslive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live on the Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com. My guest is Criston T. Harris. You can follow him on X at Criston T. Harris and therundownlive.com. That's therundownlive.com. How else can people find you? How else can people follow your work, Criston?
Sure. Rumble.com/therundownlive. You can find us on Spotify, iHeart Radio, or anywhere where podcasts are found. And, I wanted to link some things together. There's just so much information when it comes to the MK Ultra, umbrella is the whole fact that the Temple of Set was involved with MK Ultra. That's a satanic temple, specifically the MK Naomi aspect of things. And Michael Aquino, who was one of the heads of the Temple of Set, was also in charge of psychological warfare for the military. And he also was involved with MKUltra and Sidney Gottlieb, who is the father of MKUltra, who got it after Operation Artichoke, which is, like I mentioned before, where they got the psychological aspect of things, of torture, of good cop, bad cop, blackmail, mind control, and programming and trying to get data out of people. So we know that a lot of these ritual abuse and these torture ideas, when you mentioned, you know, why would they do such horrible things, it came from these satanic religions. That's where they got it from, is these occults. And how did they mind control their members? Well, it was through a very similar type of child abuse.
Right.
That's really the origins of a lot of this government experimentation on MKUltra. It's the child abuse. It's it's the idea of satanic occults. The Temple of Set was also mentioned, by the way, in the Franklin controversy. I don't know if you remember the Franklin controversy, where the witness said that who was programmed, said that the Temple of Set was directly involved. And like we mentioned, Michael Aquino, head of psychological warfare for the military, worked hand in hand with none other than Sidney Gottlieb, the guy in charge of MKUltra. So these are some real things. And devil worshiping and abuse and, you know, identifying children who are well, that could be programmed and split into multiple personalities. It became an art form. And who's to say people like Tyler Robinson weren't MKUltra stooges of modern day social media, amongst everything. So it was really interesting to see Lauren Boebert's question about, you know, are DOE weapons being involved, directed energy weapons? And I think she asked the wrong question. If I would have asked her, asked a question, do you think my voice to skull technology is being used to control people's minds to commit crimes? And I would say yes. Just look at the Navy Yard shooter. Look at things where people claim to hear voices from outside of their head and commit crimes. It's a large thing. If you look at how often crimes are committed where people hear voices from the outside of their head, it's a real thing, especially when you have people in the military. They're like, oh, they have this ability to put voices in your head and drive you crazy. Now, I liked Stephen Kinsey's answer about how social media, they don't need microwave weapons. They don't need directed energy weapons or anything when we have social media to control the narrative.
Yeah,
when we have people eating Tide Pods.
Right. I actually have that clip because it's an interesting one. It's Tim Burchett, representative, asks him about...
Oh, Tim Burchett. I apologize.
Oh, yeah. He's fantastic. He really is... you know, been one of the best people on the Hill these days. So let's go to the clip of him. It's the one I just put in there, talking about this and asking about, you know, this being used to program sort of mind controlled assassins. And it's kind of an interesting answer. And it sort of gets out, possibly out of the realm of what people typically think of as MK Ultra, the actual like one to one, we're going to torture this person to mind control them. And it's like, are these same aspects of mind control now being used on a mass scale through social media and other things? So here's the clip again from earlier today, Representative Tim Burchett.
Is that what we've learned in MKUltra, now that it has advanced so much to algorithms and the computer and getting to loners, that some of these loners could, through this just mass propagation of whatever you're doing, could cause someone to maybe take a shot at a president?
I know there's a lot of speculation out there about the Butler shooting, and I guess even the Charlie Kirk shooting. I just hate to speculate because I don't know. I have no firsthand knowledge whether those guys were programmed through radio waves or through their computer activity. So I would never hazard a guess, except to say what I've already said, that they developed means that we've never been told about many, many years ago. And I imagine they've evolved to be much more effective now. So
let me interrupt you one more time, and I apologize again. But don't you think that they could cast this broad net through these algorithms and other things, and maybe they don't know the exact person it's going to affect, but they know what type of person it's going to affect, and they know it's going to happen. And that way they can't predict when it's going to happen, but they think it will happen, And then that way they can sort of wash their hands of this whole thing and say, well, we didn't have anything to do with it, but in effect they really did, because they put this out there and they continue to put it out there to whatever method you're talking about. Go ahead, guys. I'm sorry. Ma'am, if you want to jump in.
She's with NIH.
Okay. Doctor, go ahead.
It sounds to me like you're describing something like the Martin Luther King assassination. The FBI didn't carry it out, but it created such a climate, just denouncing King as the most dangerous man in America and putting out all this material about how he was helping communists, that they must have thought, it's going to filter down. Somebody will take action, and then we can say we didn't have anything to do with it.
And James Earl Ray was a third-rate thief. He made an incredible shot, 1 foot on a commode, 1 foot in a bathtub, leaning out of a window, basically. And the next day, or that afternoon, all the shrubbery was cut in front of the flop house he was staying in. There's a lot on that one that will never be discussed. I have some friends that were there, so I guess I'm on pretty close to firsthand knowledge. But, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm probably going to get audited when I walk out of the room.
All right, so that's, Burchett. So it seems like they sort of got a little off topic there, because they're more talking about, seeding stories to the media to engender outrage, to cause something to happen. It's a little bit different than, like, using radio waves to control somebody's brain. But, of course, we know, I would say Discord is probably a very useful tool in all of this. And there have been multiple examples of either prominent assassinations. Obviously, Discord is very involved in the Charlie Kirk assassination timeline as presented by the authorities, as well as things like the Buffalo shooter was groomed on Discord. The shooter, I believe, in Uvalde was in contact with some of the same people. And then you've got things like these child abuse networks, like the Order of Nine Angles and all this stuff that we've covered, extensively, where they are essentially dragnets, sort of, going out there and seeing who they can corrupt, who they can get, to abuse themselves and put it on camera. So how do you think MK Ultra is evolving for the modern day? That's what I feel like is really being discussed here. How are these techniques developed and refined from the 50s to the 70s on individuals? Are they now being utilized on a mass scale?
I believe absolutely they are. One of the victims of MKUltra, Elisa E, suggested that artificial intelligence is going to be the god of mind control in the near future because of the way it can control what we see, what we don't see, and it will work to whatever who controls it, to whatever their goal is, and try to get people to do things. People are very easily persuaded. Just look at the whole QAnon conspiracy. All you had to do is have a lot of people believe that children are locked in underground chambers, which they could be, military deep underground bases and such, because that was Elisa E's story, who happens to be a MK Ultra victim survivor. She suggests that, like, this is going on. You just look at the way we are controlled by social media. We have attention spans of nanoseconds, where just a flip of the thumb gets us our news on TikTok. And whether or not it's true, we don't know. I'm all for a free market news enterprise where we can have the trash with the good rather than the government suppressing it. But the debt to pay here is where people are not able to distinguish reality, because they plant, GMO crops of news in the garden of their mind, and they grow unhealthy ideas. Mm. But I think that's something that they know is going to happen. It's just like the whole, video game world, where they have these militarized video games where they know that it'll encourage mass shootings. It'll encourage people to go, get guns and do things like Call of Duty. You're going to have people out there that are going to, go ahead and do mass shootings, and it'll further the cause of trying to come and take the guns, and they didn't have to even do anything. They'll just find somebody that's on psychotropic re-up inhibitors, some kind of psychedelic drug that the government prescribes you now, and they'll go ahead and they'll just shoot up your local school or go after whatever political adversary that they're programmed to go after. I talked about this like it was 10 years ago. They had this Donald Trump video game, and it was all about trying to assassinate Donald Trump. Right. And it was free to download, and we were playing it. And we're like, how is this Like, how, why is this? You'd shoot him and his wig would fall off, and your whole, the whole game concept is you're this bodyguard and you gotta save Donald Trump because someone's trying to assassinate him. Well, move forward. We have, you know, people that are taking pot shots at the president. What's interesting to me is that they're now trying to blame every pot shot taken on the president based on somebody who is radicalized by the Epstein files. And it isn't like the general public that is radicalized by the Epstein files. It's the fact that the government isn't having any accountability. There's no grand jury going after these people who have trafficked young women because they're powerful and they're friends of the president. And how dare you go after these individuals? That's the real reason why people are being radicalized. And I think that good people can succumb to the madness of this world and take up arms and try to change things. And that's exactly what they're trying to do, to come up with new laws to go ahead and try to encroach us. Just look at these flock cameras now that monitor everything you do, where you go, who you talk to, how often you talk to, where you drive. If you get pulled over now, they can just look up all your flock history and see how many times you violated the law. Maybe they'll retrograde some tickets and send it to you. But I'm telling you, Big Brother is going to work hand in hand. Blackmail, they don't need to get really any real like garbage on people. They can just get the flock cameras to record you everywhere you go and find out who you're with to really go ahead and do all their dirty work. They're making it easy on themselves. And I think there's some truth to how this is going to work. We are working in a world that is becoming very Minority Report like, and that the government is definitely going above and beyond to really collect metadata. Even people who play video games are collecting metadata, like the Pokemon Go game, right? Every time they take a video on their Pokemon Go, they capture that and they're using that to map out the world. And of course, the video game company is going to sell that out to somebody, you know, so that they could go ahead and do that. A cop in Milwaukee recently was busted for using flock cameras for checking on his girlfriend. I'm sure he's not the only one. I'm sure thousands of cops are stalking their lovers and girlfriends and their dudes that are men that they're cheating on them with. So I think that there's a lot to be said here on how MK Ultra could work and the mind control aspect of things. The whole idea is that we have no clue what is real and they don't want us to know what is real. But the people that do know what is real, we have our hands in the sand. We have our hands in the dirt, planting gardens of good seeds to grow healthy ideas in the garden of our listeners' minds. And we gotta really take a look at these different aspects of things. MK Ultra is alive in many shapes and forms. And I think that the way they're doing it is through OnlyFans. They're doing it through the perversion of our youth, right? Like, you can't get a waitress anymore at a local diner because they're working at OnlyFans. You can't get the girls to dance around the pole anymore because they're all doing OnlyFans. Your husband could be tuning in to OnlyFans. They're ruining the culture. They're destroying the culture using social media, the internet, and the interwebs and electronic devices. These whole data centers are being created just so in the future you can have your robot wipe your ass, and at the end of the day, you're going to be able to download your consciousness in a computer and allegedly live forever, and the taxpayer dollar is going to pay for it, and we're going to use all your water up in the meantime.
You know, it's just hearing you talk right there, a couple things jump out to me. The fact you bring up the over-prescription of things like SSRIs these days, like, what effect is that having? On top of that, just the idea that you're being surveilled constantly, like that was the psychological imperative behind the Panopticon, right? It was this idea came up with by some French guy or something, but the idea was you're going to have this sort of, you know, mirrored window, being able to see into every cell at once. So obviously you can't be watching every cell at once, but just the idea that you might be watched is going to change the behavior of the prisoners. And it actually reminded me of a conversation I had with, it was one of my friend's fiancés, it was this guy, and he must have, I mean, the school he was describing going to in elementary and middle school, and I think high school as well, it was clearly an MK Ultra operation. It was like this gate operation. And he was like, oh yeah, every room had, one-way mirror windows, and the whole point of the school was what happens if the kids are observed constantly and are constantly surveilled. So this is something they've actually run tests on and had populations growing up observed constantly, and they're testing how does that change behavior, how does that change what people are trying to get away with versus not trying to get away with. So I think just the idea that you're being surveilled constantly just that concept is going to alter how humans behave. So, I mean, when you're talking about changing people's behavior, this is obviously being done on purpose. This is obviously being done on a societal level. And we know, of course, from the founders of Facebook and others, they've come out and they admitted, yeah, we designed our program to basically hack your dopamine receptors and to give you a dopamine hit every time you opened our app. It's like they're literally going into your brain and manipulating it. It's just one step removed. And I'm sure you've heard the story, and it's a very common one when it comes to mind control. In the 50s, they installed something on in a bull's brain, a male cow, and they could have that bull charging a target, and they could stop it on a dime. They'd flip a switch, and the bull would just stop moving. And they could literally control this bull like a puppet using a radio-activated node in their brain. Now, take that technology, extrapolate it out. Now you're not putting something in the brain, but you're still manipulating behavior just from a farther distance. But these are some of the things that came to my mind while you were talking. The prescription medicine and the surveillance, these things on a societal level are shifting humanity, changing humanity as a whole, yet it's happening in a subtle, quiet, not really noticeable way day over day. But look back 10 years and you can see everybody's gone insane. So it's been an effective program, I think.
Well, absolutely. I think that back in the day, they'd give you LSD, but what does it matter if your doctor is giving you the drugs that they know that is most efficient to control your mind? You mentioned that nobody's watching you all the time, but AI is. And let's not forget that social credit scores are going to change every natural interaction like we're having into a transaction. So you're going to be controlled based on how you act, how you react. And this is the establishment that we're building through AI data centers, and you're going to pay for it. But if you say AI data centers are bad, you're a liberal. That's the modern day context. No, it's an everybody issue. It's a freedom issue. It's a freedom versus tyranny issue. And it's a mind control issue. MK Ultra is no longer on an individual basis, although I'm sure there are people that are still abused and a lot of these things are going on, probably to like the government's use for Manchurian candidates to infiltrate governments and to assassinate people. I'm sure there's still that aspect of things, but the actual mind control, the real game is on social media because everyone is addicted to it. Everyone is plugged in. How far will you go for that next 3 million views? How far will you go to make that next $500 based on your post on social media? And are you doing it based on true information? No, I mean, it's like the media doesn't even care about true information anymore. You can post some garbage on TikTok about whatever it is, and people will believe it, whether it's flat earth or QAnon. People will start going, oh, the earth is flat. Okay, cool. Where's the evidence? Let's have a debate about it. You're going to get 3 million views for, confronting somebody. Well, where's the evidence to support that? We need to have things that are sound on evidence, that are proven, that we can prove with our own two hands, reproducible results. And you got to think that way. The problem is Common Core curriculum intentionally messed up our children. It was all part of UN Agenda 21. It was a direct branch of that. Now we got CRT, which is even worse than Common Core curriculum. You have kids that can't count. Now you got kids that can't think for themselves. They're all created to be government-sponsored, mind-controlled activists. And that's really what the indoctrination system of public school has become. It is controlling children's mind. They're trying to generationally weed us old people out, just like they weeded out all the good cops during the whole Agenda 21 thing by starving municipalities for their budgets.
You're right.
So that's what happened. They retired.
And then this is the interesting thing. You know, we saw earlier the guy mention, and this is something I've talked about for a long time, the concept of brainwashing. You know, we hear brainwashing, we think somebody being hypnotized to do something or having their beliefs changed. But the word itself, it's about washing the brain. First, you have to get rid of the operating system so you can install a new one. Well, it's a lot easier to do that on kids. Their operating system is only developed for a few years. It's a heck of a lot easier to wipe that than it is to wipe somebody whose beliefs and mindset has been ingrained over decades as an adult. So another interesting, wrinkle to that. I want to play one more video before we have to let you go. Clip number 16 here. This is sort of about the history of where this came from. And again, as we're talking about MK Ultra or mind control or whatever you want to call it, going from the individual to the societal level, seems to me that it probably, this whole concept probably started at the societal level, then went down to the individual, and now is being opened up to the societal again, because these programs originally came from places like Nazi Germany, who were very interested in shaping the mindsets of their entire nation rather than individuals one at a time. Let's watch clip 16.
Operation Paperclip brought over 1,600 German scientists into the United States government after World War II, including individuals who had conducted human experimentation in concentration camps. The CIA and military were aware of their backgrounds and recruited them anyways. In your research, did you find direct documentation between Paperclip scientists and the development of MKUltra's experimental protocols, specifically the use of mescaline, hypnosis, and sensory deprivation, which were techniques also documented at Dachau?
Absolutely. Kurt Bloma, who was the chief of biological weapons development for the Nazi government, came to work for the CIA. So did Walter Schreiber, who was the Surgeon General of the Nazi Army. I can just tell a brief story. When I was researching my book, I found what I think might be the first secret CIA prison or black site. It's a nice chalet in Germany. And the guy who now owns it took me into the basement. He said these were the cells where the MKUltra officers, working side by side with Nazis, carried out those gruesome experiments, which were actually just continuations of the experiments that those Nazis had been conducting just a few years earlier right down the road.
Just for timeline and clarification, these experiments were happening after the Nuremberg trials, correct? So the CIA would have known that these were crimes against humanity.
I looked for an episode in which the Nuremberg doctrines were posted on the wall in some MKUltra or CIA office, and I was never able to find any indication that those Nuremberg principles ever were even consulted, much less obeyed.
Of course not, because they thought they were going to get away with it. They're never going to be actually given a trial about it. What's your take on that, Chris Don T. Harris?
Well, I think there's some legitimate conversations here, because some of the victims I've talked to also mentioned secret underground military style bases here in the United States, including some that were decked out like UFO airships so that nobody would believe that the abuse actually happened if they were to tell anyone in real life that it was happening. I think one thing that we're really missing here is the fact of epigenetic memories and epigenetic abuse, because when you have epigenetic abuse, like if our parents were easily abused and easily mind controlled, you are more susceptible to mind control and abuse, just like the monarch butterfly. That's why they use that symbolism. Is a monarch butterfly leaves Mexico and its descendants actually fly to Canada and then fly back. How did they know how to get there? It was controlled and implanted in their DNA. And we have that same ability as humans, epigenetic memories. And that's why the child of somebody who is satanically abused prior is a perfect candidate for somebody that is brainwashed and mind controlled. So the question is what are the, you know, what are the seeds that you're going to plant in the garden of your mind? Are you going to plant truth and honesty and search for fight for the truth? And or are you going to go ahead and just implant whatever the social media feed gives you? And that's what you're going to believe. You're going to look for that confirmation bias. You need to challenge your thoughts. You need to challenge your beliefs. You got to find the truth, and the truth starts with your heart. You got to realize and pray. And I believe that God is the antithesis to the satanic revolution that we're seeing, because of the fact that they hate the idea of Christianity. They hate the idea of God. They hate the idea of good and gentle and forgiveness and turn the other cheek. And, you know, an eye for an eye leaves everyone blind, right, at the end of the day. And that's the world we live in, is eye for an eye. So thank you for having me on, Harrison. I appreciate that.
Oh, my pleasure, of course. And no, you're exactly right. It's not a coincidence that all of these mind control programs also have a distinctly satanic element to it. The rituals, all of it. You know, if you're trying to get away from that stuff, you go to the opposite, which of course is God and Jesus Christ. Chris Don T. Harris can be found at Chris Don T. Harris on X. We'll be right back.
Folks, I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, Methylene Blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go.
Gee, Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of Methylene Blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we? Billy, did you know that Methylene Blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life.
Careful, Billy. He bites. Oh. Look. Vodka. Potato hooch. Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow! The Methylene Blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc, I don't know what got into me. I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the alexjonesstore.com.
What does .com mean?
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
We just received the ultimate proof that the European Union hates Europeans. We received a letter from the Commission in which they threaten to reject the Safe Europe Act. They claim that not wanting non-Western immigration goes manifestly contrary, and I repeat, manifestly contrary to the right of non-discrimination and goes against what they call European values. The mask is off.
They're openly saying wanting to protect our cultures from being replaced is racist, while at the same time, every single left-wing initiative for open borders just get passed through within days. The safe and legal access to Europe for refugees, the Europe without borders, the initiative for the rights of non-citizens in Europe were all just fine for the European Commission.
The Commission gives every single migrant that asks a key to our home, but it denies us, the native peoples of Europe, the right to defend ourselves, not even against the murder of our children. This isn't hypocrisy. It's their true face. They are saying it themselves. They don't want Europe to belong to the Europeans. They are saying that even claiming that there is such a thing as the ethnocultural identity or continuity of our peoples, that in and of itself is racist. Our mere existence is racist to them.
But of course, we don't accept that unelected bureaucrats like Ursula von der Leyen decide whether Europeans have a right to exist in Europe. So our response is clear. We are not backing down. We are not taking one word back of the Safe Europe Act. We are doubling down.
We are naive. We saw this coming. That's why we created our very own infrastructure. And so now we have a plan. We are one step ahead of them. When they really do reject our proposal, we have our next step ready. We will become their worst nightmare. And of course, those of you who already signed up on our homepage will be the first to know what our next steps will be. Because if there is one thing that I know for sure, it is that the Save Europe Act is not just an initiative. It has grown into a movement.
About 400,000 European citizens have already signed our campaign, and even more remarkable, 100,000, every fourth, has already pledged to become active in our campaign. You've heard that right. 100,000 Europeans want to become active in the Safe Europe Act, and this number should shock the bureaucrats in Brussels. And we will show them that with or without the permission, we are going to reach the 1 million, and we promise you, we are going to make your voices heard.
And so with the help of that army of volunteers, you will soon be seeing posters, flyers, stickers, you name it, of the Save Europe Act in European cities, the very cities that we are trying to save. That is why Brussels is afraid. They know what is coming, and that is why they are trying to shut us down.
We are not waiting for the invitation. On the 15th of July, we will go to Brussels and we're taking all of your signatures with us. We know that rational arguments don't convince them. The only thing that convinces them is the sheer amount and the number. The silent majority needs to get active. We need your help. We're going to show them that most of Europeans want remigration, that the majority of Europeans want to survive.
Sign it now. Share it. Convince your friends and family. Because only together can we make this movement too big to ignore. Only together can we make remigration happen. And only together can we save Europe.
That's a Save Europe Act, Eva Vlaardinger-Brook, as well as some other really great activists there in Europe. It's not a coincidence, folks, that this is all happening at exactly the same time. At exactly the same time that Europe is being overrun and having their laws changed to allow a bunch of hostile foreigners to take over and dominate that nation, at the exact same time that it's happening in America, and at exactly the same time both Europe and America and Australia and New Zealand and Canada and anywhere else the white European diaspora is also getting digital ID laws and biometric identification laws. It's not a coincidence, folks, because it's an attack. It's not an accident. They aren't just trying their best and failing. They're trying to eradicate a race of people because that race of people came up with human rights that happened to be a barrier to their total domination of humanity. We'll be right back with Pete.
Decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at alexjoneslive.com.
Alex Jones is back. The info war continues at alexjoneslive.com. And you can follow us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at The Alex Jones Show Live. Plus, you can download the app, alexjonesapp.com. So check it out now and let the deep state globalists know we will never be silenced.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour is on. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on this Tuesday afternoon, the 30th of June, 2026. We are on, of course, the Alex Jones Network. You can find us at alexjoneslive.com. And I'm very happy to welcome my guest, Peter Brimelow. He can be found on X at Peter Brimelow, peterbrimelow.com as well. And of course, Mr. Brimelow, you have been fighting the fight to preserve European homelands and European character for a very long time. And the birthright citizenship decision by the Supreme Court is just the latest blow to your mission, my mission, to just maintain our existence in this world. I loved your tweet. You didn't call it I'm not sure if it was a retweet or what, but you called it the birthright citizenship atrocity. It's not a decision. It wasn't a ruling. This is an atrocity. I completely agree. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me on, Harrison. Yes, it was a 5-4 decision, so it's not as bad as all the catastrophic acts of judicial imperialism like gay marriage decision or the Brown versus Board, which were unanimous, or even Roe, you know, which was unanimous. Yep. But it is going to trigger a huge... The reason I like this is, you know, we've now finally got to what Sun Tzu called death ground, you know, the American right, in fact, the American nation has to fight it. It has no alternative, otherwise it will be liquidated.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I share that with you. Like, I'm upset at this. Obviously, I think it's wrong. I think it's wrong on the face of it. I think it's absurd. I don't even understand the actual argument to allow this. It seems entirely based on feelings and not wanting to make foreigners feel bad that they're not American. I mean, the whole thing's absurd, but I'm having trouble. It's like, but of course they're going to make this decision. But of course they're going to allow birthright citizenship to continue.
why wouldn't they? I mean, this is in line with the destruction of our countries that's gone on totally unabated for the last several decades. So I was not surprised by this, and I'm having a hard time even being upset by it, because it's like, of course they're going to put this final nail in our coffin. I mean, you certainly weren't surprised by this decision, were you?
Well, you could see it was going, everybody said it was going in a bad direction. And of course, basically the four women who ruled in favor of birthright citizenship, they basically tried to write it into the Constitution, which it wasn't before at all. Five women, if you count John Roberts. It was obviously just a complete coward and didn't want to face the uproar if he actually ruled the right way. We started VDare.com, which, as you know, Harrison, was the website, immigration patriot website I founded after we were purged from National Review. I founded in 1999. We've been writing about this for 25 years. And so, from my point of view, this is absolutely terrific, because when we started writing about the law of birthright citizenship, it was completely unheard of. It was an issue that nobody knew anything about, apparently, and certainly not the average Republican. But now they do. There's no way around it. And it's become a political issue. And this is the great thing about one of the things they've done is, apparently, there's some dispute about this, they've precluded the ability of Congress to get out of this legislatively by redefining the terms through legislation. They will have to go to a constitutional amendment. But of course, I think that's absolutely terrific, because it means there's going to be a fist fight in two-thirds of the states of the country. And the Democrats are going to have to stand up and justify, why is it okay for Chinese women to fly into birth tourism? Why is it okay for them to fly into California, have a baby, turn around and go back? There's apparently 1.5 million Chinese now who technically have American citizenship. What are they going to do? They can come in here at any time, whenever they want. It's a complete racket, and it has to be stopped. And the majority opinion made no attempt to address this.
Yeah, and them coming to California, that would be one thing. The craziest thing is they get to go to like an island in Guam right off the coast of China, right. Get born right there, go back a couple days later, and they're as American as you or I. I mean, it's completely absurd. This is why I'm like, I have trouble even talking about it, because it's just on the face of it, such a suicidal thing for a country to do. And we seem to be the only, at least sizable country that actually does this. Although, I mean, does the UK have anything?
If I can interrupt,
please.
A lot of common law countries, like Britain, for example, had birthright citizenship until they realized what was going on, and they stopped it. And that's really the issue here, I mean, the Supreme Court is not God, despite what the liberals think. If it rules the wrong way, it can be reversed by legislation, in this case, a constitutional amendment. That's what happened with income tax. I mean, the Supreme Court found federal income tax unconstitutional. So they passed a constitutional amendment, and we got income tax. And that's what's going to happen here. But the thing I really like is the fight that's going to develop over it. Because these Democrats are going to have to justify a lot of utterly absurd things, which they're willing to justify, but they would have much preferred it to be swept under the carpet.
Well, and they're not exactly that, consistent with their decisions. It's why it's always kind of confused or, uncertain when we're coming up to a vote. They don't seem to be actually guided by any principle or foundation in law. Obviously, right, this has been a problem for a long time. And I remember not really understanding this in like high school and stuff. My dad would talk about it. He'd say the Supreme Court is writing law and they're not supposed to do that. But that's sort of what you're highlighting,
good
right?
Good for him. Good for him, by the way. That was a perception. I was on the Hill. In the early years of the Reagan administration, I worked for Senator Hatch on the Judiciary Committee. And I remember one of the people in the Reagan judge-picking operation telling me that, when they were dealing with all these Republican lawyers, they had absolutely no conception of what was going on, what the left was doing. They thought that if you were a judge, you just have to call balls and strikes. But that's not the way the left judges thinks about it at all. They think you get in there, you've got the power, you just rewrite the law.
Right.
And the average Republican lawyer across the country has no conception of that at all. Now they do. The Federalist Society has done a lot of good work in, but the problem is the Federalist Society is no good at immigration, so it wasn't vetting its candidates like Amy Coney Barrett for what they thought about immigration.
Yeah, and I mean, that's such a fascinating aspect of this. And again, so, I mean, What happens here, do you think? Do you think there's going to be a congressional amendment? Because I do like seeing that there's almost this like revival, I think, with the Epstein list. I mean, that was the executive branch not doing something. So the legislative branch came in and sort of forced their hand. And I love seeing that. It's like, okay, this is the checks and balances that our government is supposed to operate by. Are we seeing a revival of that? Is the Congress actually looking around going, hey, these people are usurping all the power it's supposed to be to us? I'd love to see them gather that power back in again and actually exert oversight over the intelligence agencies and, you know, actually pass laws instead of delegating it to the Supreme Court. But then you look at the Republican Party now, they can't even pass the SAVE Act. They can't get anything done. So, I mean, how likely is it, do you think, that this actually gets solved legislatively?
As I say, it's death ground. If they don't do it, then the nation is going to be liquidated. But I think it is likely. I think that people are much more aware of what's going on here. I see that, for example, the head of the Heritage Foundation, Kevin Roberts, has called for constitutional amendment in the wake of this stupid decision. It's not a Dred Scott decision. It's precipitating a civil war. But for Roberts to do that, for the Heritage Foundation, D.C. to do that, is a remarkable thing, because that's at the heart of the conservative establishment. And if they don't want to punt on this issue, or they realize they can't punt on this issue, you know, a lot of other people a lot of other legislators and so on are going to go along.
And it seems like, I mean, obviously the lesson I keep learning over and over again, or that I wish everybody else would learn over and over, is like, we were not harsh enough before. We played a clip yesterday of a congressman all the way back in, I think it was like 2010 or something, and his constituency was objecting to the Haitians being dropped off in their neighborhood. And he was a Republican, but he was going, well, you know, it's like, we might not like it, but hey, it's the law. We got to do what we got to do. And obviously there's this fear of being called racist that, you know, stops him from actually supporting, you know, his own people. And looking back, it's like, man, those people were not intense enough. You know, the objections were kind of like, hey, we're not sure we really like this and nobody really asked us. It's like going back in time, they should have been screaming and tearing the roof down by the rafters, seeing what's happened to their town in the meantime. But I guess my question is, how do we get through to the Republicans who still have a fear of racism, still feel like they're the bad guy for saying no? My thing is like, you know, me as an American, I would never go to Japan and stay there and then be mad if they kicked me out. How do we get across to people? Like, there's nothing mean about this. There's nothing racist about this. This is about our country and our preservation. How do we get over the fear people have of just taking the side of Americans or white people in particular? How do we break through that fear?
Well, I recommend relentless ridicule. I think that's, yeah. that helps a lot. And these Congress critics, they do react to criticism. I mean, as I told you, Harrison, you know, I worked on the Hill for a couple of years, and it was very interesting because we think the U.S. Senator is a powerful figure and is shaping the agenda, but they think that they're just trapped on this raft in the middle of the ocean and in the middle of the dark of night, and these huge waves come out of nowhere, and they have to pull the raft around so that they can get its bows into the water, into the wave, and get over it. And then there's another damn wave coming the opposite direction. It's all public opinion. I mean, they're terrified of this kind of thing, and so we just have to keep, you know, relentlessly ridiculing them. I mean, obviously the left are fanatics, but the average Republican congressman is just trying to keep his head above water.
But, you know, as you pointed out, the left really does. They see if they obtain a position, they are not, you know, submerging their own desires in the responsibility they've been given. They see it as a license. They go, oh, I'm in charge now. Great. It's going to go my way. Forget what the job is. Again, this is another thing where it's like, how do we get across to, because the problem is that creates a feedback loop. Because then if you're not doing that, you're the sucker. You're the idiot. You're the one playing by the rules. They're, you know, eating your lunch. So it's like, if we're going to have this open system, we have to ruthlessly police it to make sure that judges or anybody in a position of power is not abusing that power for their own desires. Because the only other option is, well, they're doing it, we'll do it even more. And that's how the whole system breaks down, right? How do we stop that feedback loop from taking over?
I think one of the problems is that Republicans typically don't sit around thinking of awful things they can do to their opponents. Whereas Democrats do. I mean, for example, they're obviously eager to make Puerto Rico and D.C. a state and things like that. We should have been, the Republicans should have been thinking about, well, why don't we just throw Puerto Rico out of the Union altogether and make it independent, which is what the Czechs did, the Slovaks, when they got fed up with them, all the Singaporeans to the Malaysians. That doesn't seem to have occurred to anybody on the Republican side. There are some people who do sit around thinking about terrible things they can do to opponents. I've always been very intrigued by Daniel Horowitz at The Blaze, you know. He has a whole series of things that he's put out today saying, well, why don't we just stop appropriating money to give birth certificates to babies who are born here from illegal mothers. If they don't technically have the birth certificate, they're not going to be able to vote, you know. So why don't we just do that? And for that matter, you know, the Congress could simply stop appropriating money for some of these courts that have gotten out of control. For example, the DC circuit appears to be completely controlled by communists. So defund it. You know, it can be done. It's just that people don't think about these things. You have to have sort of vicious, mean people sitting around thinking about these things. And that's what we were trying to do at VDare.com.
Yeah. Well, and the weird thing is our system requires that to a lot of ways. You know, the classic things you hear Republicans say, you better not do that or else you're not going to like it. If we do it to you, don't set the precedent. But the Democrats do the thing, and then Republicans never pay them back. It's like, you know, you actually have to do it to them now, because that's the precedent setting. Otherwise, they're just going to keep doing whatever the hell they want, and Republicans are going to continue to be impotent. And I agree. Same thing with, like, when the Democrats say we're going to pack the Supreme Court. To me, the only appropriate response to that is to pack it first before they can do it. It's like,
that's right.
You know, what are they going to say? You're not allowed to do that. Only we are. No, if you do it, we get to do it. That's the way our system is supposed to operate. But the Republicans are just universally cowards. It's absurd.
I know people we both respect, like Scott Greer and so on, say that a civil war is impossible in the U.S. Well, my position, we're already in a civil war.
Right.
I mean, for example, our experience at VDare.com at the hands of Letitia James, New York Attorney General, for that matter, President Trump's experience. There's no rule of law in New York State. Yeah. Jonathan Turley called it the land that law forgot. And similarly, Minnesota, for example, is obviously not obeying it was obviously in a state of insurrection.
Right.
When ICE was trying to deport all these people. And I'm extremely sorry that Trump didn't drive through and declare the Insurrection Act and put Governor Waltz and Mayor Frey in jail, you know, and run on that issue. But, you know, well, guess what? We've got the Birthright Citizenship Amendment thing to run on now. And I think it could help him enormously in the midterms. They should just make it an issue and make it the up and down issue that people have to vote on. Because it's fantastically unpopular. I mean, people think, when people, it's explained to people, which of course it almost never is, they think it's just nuts. Why is it that illegal immigrants can cross the border and immediately have a child and that child's a citizen and that means you can't deport the parents as a practical matter and all that kind of thing? Have the Democrats justify this?
No, it's completely insane. And of course, the most insane part about birthright citizenship is it's like, okay, you can be a citizen or your kid can be a citizen as long as you break our laws. It's like, as long as you violate our sovereignty, then you can be a citizen. I mean, it's so backwards. It's ridiculous. And of course, Mom Donnie would be another one, right? He makes a video after a Supreme Court decision. And this is another thing about the Supreme Court and the Democrats. The Supreme Court will decide something and the Democrats just ignore it. They just don't care. DEI,
right?
I mean, there's video after video, undercover video in universities, and they go, you know, the Supreme Court outlawed DEI. Are you guys still doing it? And they go, yeah, of course we're still doing it. No one's stopping us. We're going to keep doing it. Mom Donnie going, well, the Supreme Court's
just under a different name.
Yeah, well, if that even, right? Yeah, if they, I mean, maybe they'll change the name, maybe not. Nothing happens regardless, right? And Mom Donnie goes, yeah, you know, they said TPS expired, but I'm not listening to them. And it's like, you've got to crush this. I mean, it's not tyrannical. Right. To make the states abide by the federal government. That's why we have a federal government. So,
is it a nation of laws or not is the issue.
Exactly.
Is it a nation of laws or not? And in New York State, it's not a nation. It's not under law. I was very disappointed today with the Supreme Court's apparent decision not to take up the case of this woman who claims that Trump raped her 1,000 years ago on a day she can't remember. In that case, the the New York State legislature, they've essentially passed an act of a bill of attainder against Trump.
Right.
They changed the law so that she could get around the statute of limitations. Then as soon as she filed, they changed it back. And this thing has been in New York courts forever. And the judges entertain it and won't throw it out. Now the Supreme Court has refused to review the, this $5 million judgment against Trump. The whole thing's obviously absurd, and it's a legal atrocity. Now, just because the Supreme Court refuses to review something doesn't mean that it's ruling on its merits. It doesn't want to get involved into that time. There's a limited number of things it can take on. So it's not necessarily a rejection of Trump's arguments. But on the other hand, how is he going to get out of paying this $5 million? I'm sure he's thinking about it. But the whole thing is completely disgraceful. And I don't see any solution to the problem of these blue states except just going on in and putting them under federal control, eventually to get the judicial system straight. I don't see any solution to the problem of, all these Biden judges who appointed,
right,
who are obviously illiterate and stupid and are ruled entirely on the basis of racial bias and so on. It's just going to have to be a wholesale purge of them. I mean, just impeach all of them and get rid of them.
And it's another aspect where the Supreme Court came in and said district judges cannot do nationwide injunctions against, executive orders, but they do it anyway. So it's like we fight it all the way up to the Supreme Court. We win. The leftist ignores it. The right doesn't enforce it. We cannot win. We can't get a victory. Meanwhile, whatever comes out from the Supreme Court.
This is an issue where I see that there are a couple of cases where Republicans, legislators have introduced into Congress attempts to impeach Biden judges.
Right.
There's that woman who was having sex with the local police chief or something in a chamber. They're probably going to try and impeach her now. I would prefer it to be on a different issue, although she's obviously, a really bad case. Apparently, she never rules on civil cases. She just lets her clerks do all the work.
Well,
which is a problem, of course. When you see these Supreme Court justices, a lot of the work is just done by the clerks.
Yep. And
who are all left-wing loonies, of course.
They are. And, the judges themselves, we've looked up some of the biographies, and it's like, She lived in Tobago or wherever until she was 25. Then she spent 5 years at an NGO suing the government to let in more legal immigrants. And then Biden put her in a judge robe, and now she's in charge. And it's like, why does our country do this? Why is anybody?
I think there's an excellent case, Harrison, you can't be the president of the U.S. if you're an immigrant. You have to be native born. Well, I think there's a case for extending that to judges. Because I think about half of the DC circuit are immigrants.
Yep.
Because basically the Biden administration couldn't find enough people of color with the minimum qualifications to be a judge. I think that's something that probably has to be done. It's just make it clear that if you're a federal judge, you have to be native born. All right, this means I can't be a federal judge, of course.
Well, that's.
And
that, of course, makes
you, a good thing.
That makes you infuriated, right? And it's unfair to you, and how dare we keep you from this, right? Again, that's what I don't understand. You're an immigrant. It's like if we told you, hey, sorry, buddy, you're not from here, you can't be a judge, it wouldn't make you mad.
Yeah,
you wouldn't get pissed off,
people
right?
are completely wrong about this. Yeah, people are completely wrong about the way immigrants think about this. And this is true even for Hispanic. When I was at Vidal, we had a writer, Alan Wall, who was married to a Mexican woman. He would always say that the way to deal with the Hispanic vote is to treat them like Americans because they don't have this pathological loyalty to the ethnic group. They know the whole system is broken and stupid and ridiculous. I mean, I knew it was when I started going through it in 1970. You could see the whole system was broken. It's just that the only people who don't know this are American intellectuals.
And they know, right? They know, and they're okay with it, right? They're not blind to the effects.
Well, they're not even aware of the arguments,
right?
Not even aware of the flaws, because they don't want to know.
It's a very troubling situation we find ourselves in these days.
I think it's great. As I say, it's like it may precipitate a civil war. But the Trump has a real issue to run on here, which is we've got to stop illegal aliens for having children here, having them become citizens and expropriating your tax monies and voting in your communities. I think it's a terrific issue. And he's, you know, I think he could win the midterms on it.
Well, I hope so. I just, you know, we haven't seen the deportation numbers that we've needed. I mean, we really need a wholesale reorganization of this system.
Harrison, they're not as bad. They're not as bad. I mean, if you look at the immigrant workforce population, it is falling like a rock. And that's because of self-deportation, which is what happened during Operation Wetback. It was self-deportation in the 50s. It was so I don't completely write off what Trump's been doing here, or somebody's been doing. Maybe it's Stephen Miller.
Well, all right. White pill to Peter Brimelow. We'll be right back. We'll talk more. And I want to get into what happened to VDare, of course. Sort of similar stories between VDare and InfoWars, unfairly targeted because we're right and compelling. Peter Brimelow joins me again on the other side. Don't go anywhere, folks. We'll be back in just a minute or two.
But first, listen to me very carefully. I've got all these studies and articles out. Breastfeeding protects babies against ADHD, autism, low IQs. Brain's up to one-third smaller if they never get mother's milk. Breastfeeding protects baby against risk of ADHD in another major study. New study strongly links Merck's Gardasil HPV vaccine to all sorts of neurological disorders. Why is corn syrup in so many American infant formulas? Some of them are up to 70%. So deadly, so bad. Plus synthetic vitamins and minerals, which are actually toxic. Adverse effects of infant formula made with corn syrup, solids on the development of eating behaviors in Hispanic children, definitely linked to the obesity and diabetes and all the rest of it. Corn syrup and formula, absolutely not safe. Well, what's the opposite of corn syrup and fake milk? It's colostrum. Notice hospitals tell people, oh, give your baby milk the first few weeks, you know, fake milk. Oh, don't worry about breastfeeding. And then the mother's milk never comes in. So then about half the mothers never have their milk come in. So they go right on the formula. Ooh, formula, high-tech sounding name. Ooh, trust the science. And all the studies are the brains are much smaller, lower IQs, all these serious problems. Because your brain's made out of fat mainly, and you need the mother's fat to do that. But the colostrum has all the mother's immunity, it's a natural vaccine, all these peptides, all these super nutrients. Well, I already have colostrum. I take some of it. My mom's really into it. One day I came over to her house and I gave her two canisters of it and told her, tell me what you think of this. But I forget about it. It's my dad's birthday last year. We're at an Italian restaurant and she starts saying, and she never wants to be on air. She said, I'll go in there for this. She goes, look at my hair. He goes, it's gray. He has a lot of it, but it's gray. She goes, look, it's coming back in blonde. Look at this. Look at this. She goes, and look at David. He was totally bald. He's been on a few months. It's literally hairs coming in. And if you look it where it was already, it's coming in brown and it's gray here. This is insane. This is way better. I want more of that. I want more of that. I said, okay, I'll get it for you. You can buy it at alexjonesstore.com.
And a back problem that I've had since Alex was born is almost completely gone after 50, however many years. And my hair is much thicker than it has been. And I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker. And this is brand new.
Turned darker.
And darker.
So you need to get it. It's buy one, get one free. Until tomorrow night, because I really didn't plug it. The sale launched Friday. Bovine colostrum, buy one, get one free right now. Never seen my mom on air before. She said, no, I'll do it. So I said, well, you say that on camera. So she repeated some of it on camera. You've been on colostrum now 2 months. I know. And we have the very best at thealtershore.com. And I'm serious. So, Mom, you got to listen. The products are amazing.
Well, this one, like I said, I don't do testimonials. There's a lot of good products. But this is the first one that I can go, whoa, it really.
Tell us what happened.
I have been on the colostrum for about 2 or 3 months, and a back problem that I've had since Alex was born is almost completely gone after 50, however many years. And my hair is much thicker than it has been. And I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker. And this is brand new.
Turned darker. That's how good this is. And she's been on colostrum forever. She was a master swimmer and, you know, triathlete. She's in super good shape at 76. But the point is that she swears by it. And she looked healthy before, but she looks even younger now. And she gobbles it. She takes way more than the one scoop a day. We got it. You owe it to yourself. It's not just good for your hair and skin and all the rest of it. Imagine what it's doing internally. This is the superfood of superfood from the mama mammal to the baby. This is the Uber milk. Bovine colostrum. Buy one, get one free right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And it funds the second American Revolution worldwide.
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Days, weeks, and and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I do want to remind you that the summer kickoff sale is on right now. You get buy one, get one free on Bovine Colostrum Plus at thealexjonesstore.com. Zeolite Detox is also buy one, get one 50% off. You can also get buy one, get one free for the Shilajit Complex Capsules. Buy one, get the second one free. Ultimate Life Force, buy one, get the second one 50% off. Massive discounts on some of our best-selling products. And, of course, you keep us on air and in the fight, which, of course, is increasingly difficult in this very unfriendly legal environment that we are constantly fighting back against. And, of course, my guest is Peter Brimelow, who founded VDare and is no stranger to the methods by which the United States government will shut down what they consider to be unfriendly publications. And I want to talk about that. Obviously, we're talking about the Supreme Court decision about birthright citizenship as well. And sticking with that, I just want to read a few posts here and get your comment on it, Mr. Brimelow. The first one is this. The author of the citizenship clause in the 14th Amendment, Senator Jacob Howard, literally explained during the debates that it would obviously not apply to illegal aliens or foreigners not allegiant to the United States, saying, quote, "This will not, of course, include persons born in the United States who are foreigners, aliens, who belong to the families of ambassadors or foreign ministers accredited to the government of the United States, but will include every other class of person." So, again, I'm no Supreme Court justice, but I do speak English, and this sounds pretty obvious that they did not intend for our borders to just be a, you know, get citizenship free by crossing line. I mean, does this matter? Peter, I mean, does this have any impact, the intention of the law in the first place, or is it just up to the Supreme Court entirely?
I mean, it's a point of pride among legal realists, you know, critical legal theory people, that they disregard the intent and they disregard the letter of the law. They just write what they just say what they want to say.
Right.
Now, of course, the question is how long can they maintain the confidence of the public if they do that? And I think that, 70 years of judicial supremacy, judicial imperialism like this, dating all the way back to Brown versus Board, is eroding people's respect for the law in general and the Supreme Court in particular. But, you know, the debate has now moved beyond that. The question is not, it's not really what the founders meant by this, but do Americans have a right to amend this to change this situation? And the answer, of course, is that they do. And the way to do it is through a constitutional amendment. There have been lots of them, and this is obviously time for another one. Of course, it would be a tremendous battle, and you have to get three-quarter states on board and everything. But on the other hand, as I keep saying, you know, the Democrats are going to have to defend these ridiculous situations that are developing as a result of this law. And they can't defend it. That's why they've fought so hard to keep it out of politics for so many years.
Right. And just sort of assert that it's, well, this is just the established law. This is one of the absurd things that you're talking about from Libs of TikTok. SCOTUS just greenlit this scam. Hundreds of companies provide birth tourism for foreign moms who want U.S. citizen babies. So, I mean, this is industrialized. There are more than 500 firms in China alone that take people from China to America to give birth so that they get citizenship. I mean, but I guess it's, you know, it's illegal for us to stop this industry. We are now compelled to allow these people to take advantage of the loophole like this. Again, where is the reasoning? Where is the logic? How are they pulling the wool over everybody's eyes like this? What is the argument? I mean, that's what I don't get.
Well, the thing is, this is the jugular of the Great Replacement. The Democrats are in the business of electing a new people, and they can't. Birthright citizenship is the principal way in which they're doing it. I think there's something like 200,000 to 300,000 children a year born to illegal aliens, and the Democrats think they're all going to vote Democratic. Now they may not be right, but that is what they think. They're electing a new people, and so they will fight to the death to keep this. And I say, good, let them fight to the death. Let's kill them.
Well, you want to fight? You better believe you've got one. Yeah, I think I've heard that before. And look, where we're going is not a great place. This is a schedule for San Diego's 4th of July celebration, Independence Day here in America. This is what it's going to be. Guests arrive in networking around 5 p.m. Then we have the tribal intimate blessing welcoming to the land. Then the land acknowledgement. Then the tribal invocation. Then the national and black national anthem. Then the local tribe community stories. Then Latino community stories. Then Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander community stories. Then LGBTQIA community stories. Then the black and African community stories. And then closing remarks and fireworks. So, again, on the day that's supposed to celebrate America, that's supposed to celebrate our Independence Day, it is nothing but a diversity festival of a bunch of un-American people and gay people also, I guess. Throw that in there for a good minute. As long as you cannot create white babies, you are embraced by the left on this July 4th, Independence Day 2026. I mean, I see a problem with this, Peter. I like living in a country that has a culture, that has a feels like an extended family, not this weird hodgepodge of mutually hateful groups all competing for dominance. I mean, this is just such a, and we're already here. It's only going to get worse. I saw this and I'm just like, what is even the point of celebrating Independence Day if that's your celebration?
Well, I think that is what they think. And of course, the terrible thing about this is that San Diego used to be a city dominated by the Navy. You know, my son was in, Camp Pendleton there when he was in the Marines, and the Republicans seem to have succeeded in losing control of it.
Yeah.
Of course, it's their own fault. I mean, the California Republican Party is completely, utterly useless, and they should have got behind Proposition 187 and so on and stop this illegal influx. But it's the demographic shift that's really caused the problem in California.
Yeah.
And
in New York,
the Republican Party is simply not doing enough about him.
Yeah, and it's like, even if they're just motivated by their own power, like, don't they understand that their constituents are the ones being destroyed, and why would they not want to fight back against that? Another interesting aspect of this, and I'd love to get your take on it, is I see this as an opportunity for racial solidarity, in fact. I've talked to black Americans. They're not fans of Somalians coming in and taking their welfare or whatever else. Is this not an opportunity to say, hey, look, we might have differences, but we're both American and these people are trying to take our stuff and we can come together and fight back against this? And guys, we can play clip 16 as B-roll. But this, she looks mixed race, but she's an African-American woman and she's walking around in IHOP filming herself going, this is a takeover. These damn Somalians are taking over. Well, what's your take on that? The fact that I think this could be an opportunity for coming together of every race to say we're American, they're not. It's our team versus theirs. Why can't we come together on this topic? I think this could be an opportunity for outreach. What do you think, Peter?
I mean, that's true, and we already see that working with Hispanics, the Tejanos, for example, the Mexicans Mexican-Americans who've been living in Texas for 100 years since the Mexican Revolution are obviously critical, unhappy about the recent influx of Hispanics, who are not necessarily Mexican at all. And, of course, as you know, this Hispanic term is a misnomer. There's lots of tensions between the different groups there. But really, the fundamental point, I think, that the Republican Party, the GOP, or as we used to call it at VDare, .com, the GAP, the Generic American Party, has to face it. It has to rally its white base. And you never see articles about this, what's happening to the white vote. I was looking at an article in the Washington Post yesterday about how Republicans are hopeful about South Texas because the Tejanos are getting fed up with the immigration and the fact that the Democrat Party is black dominant and so on. But they're not asking what's happening to the white vote in Texas, which, by the way, does vote very heavily Republican, which is why Texas is still Republican, unlike California. You know, the funny thing about this is the demographics of California and the demographics of Texas are not that different. The difference, the reason it's that the electoral results are so different is that Texas whites vote as Southern whites in general do together. And in California, they don't. It's not unusual for Republican candidates statewide to lose the white vote. You're not going to carry California if you can't carry the Y vote. So I think that whereas it's great that these various groups are rallying around America, fundamentally the thing to do is, the fundamental point is that the Y vote has to be mobilized. And that's not happened yet. It's been slow to develop, and Trump did it to a certain extent, but not really as powerful as he should have done. I mean, I think he got about 57-58% of the Y vote. Democrats regularly get 80-90% of their constituents' votes. I mean, I think in the case of the American blacks, it was well over 90% vote Democratic.
Yeah. Yeah, well, demographics are destiny, and they know it as well as we do. You can look at what happened in New York, voting for a bunch of socialists. Of course, you have Ben Shapiro blaming that on college-educated, useless white people, I think was his quote, when in reality, no, this is a direct effect of the demographic replacement of white people by non-white people, and that's just a statistical reality that, you know, everybody should sort of come to terms with. And do you agree with me? I see it as almost a sort of inverted mirror white supremacy, where white people are afraid to admit that white people need help or deserve consideration. You know, it's kind of there's kind of this underlying idea of like, well, we're white, so let's not, you know, talk about it too much, or we don't need to worry about our country being taken over. We're white after all. Nothing bad will happen to us. And I'm just constantly being like, no, there's nothing special about you, white people, that makes you, you know, invincible, right? There's nothing about white people that just we're going to be here forever and thrive forever. No, we can be destroyed, and we don't deserve to be destroyed, so we should stand up for ourselves. Do you understand where I'm coming from with that? That there's this weird, like...
Right. There's a tremendous amount of white guilt.
Yeah.
Among whites. And also, you know, the problem is that they're not actually racist. You know, so they're not inclined to vote against, I mean, the Republican Party has a suicidal habit of nominating black candidates for various things. Most recently, West Virginia, but across the border, they had a black gubernatorial candidate who was actually a Jamaican immigrant. It's the worst possible candidate that they could have run if they were trying to develop as a national conservative party. For some reason, the Republican operatives, and I think also the donors, find this very attractive. Right. And no amount of it being refuted. I mean, there must be a dozen cases now of black Republicans nominating black candidates who are promptly defeated. They never get the black vote. They just don't want to learn. And that's a huge problem. I don't know what's going to happen in Florida. Do you? I mean, is Barron Donald going to make it in Florida?
I have no idea, but that was the exact example I was thinking of when you said that. Cause yeah, they, you know, Republicans really are obsessed with like trying to disprove our enemies, that we're not really racist. They don't care. Like they don't, the people calling you racist don't care if you are racist.
Right,
they don't think you are. They just know it's a weapon to use against you. So I totally agree.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. Why not, you know, take your own side and do it unapologetically. And it's in a weird way, it almost seems like the Democrats have learned that where, and they're pretty open about it. They're like, hey, we just need to run candidates who are just like, I want to help working families. I'm a normal white guy. Hi. And of course, that's what happened with Spanberger in Virginia. Is she just presented herself as I'm just a normal mom and I just want to help working families. And she gets in and she governs like Chairman Mao. So they seem to have figured this out and are just running very sort of boilerplate people because they know, I think, that the American people are just like, we're just kind of sick of politics. We don't want radicals on either side. We just want to vote for somebody who can sort of be the manager and just kind of manage things by the number. Democrats are running radicals that present themselves as just sort of your normal run-of-the-mill Democrat.
However, you have to say Democrats have very serious problems, too. And one of them is that, you know, anti-Zionism has really emerged as a force on the Democratic left. Now, it's fueled by these third world immigrants that they were stupid enough to import. But there's a significant number of Jews who voted for Mandami. I think about a third of the Jewish vote went for Mandami. So that's a huge problem for them navigating that because they are going to be driven much further to the left. And it's not just the left in terms of economic redistribution and helping the working class. It's all these other crazy things that they're just interested in, like transgenderism and so on. All of that is something that they're all going to have to handle in a general election, and go to Middle America and try to talk the way out of that.
Yeah, and of course they have the media sort of helping them with this. The media is not even going to report on, you know, Abigail Spanberger, you know, gets elected as a seemingly moderate and then just starts passing all these insane bills. I go to the local news and they're not reporting on it. So, you know, a normal Democrat goes, oh, I'll vote for the nice white lady, and they vote for her, and then they don't even know that she's passing these insane laws and just like changing the rule to let rapists out of prison early. And it's just like there's no even sense to passing this stuff. But they do, and then they hide it from their constituents. It's a very sophisticated, multifaceted operation that they're running here.
Well, this is why in Britain, the Labour Party in Britain is so desperate to suppress the internet. And they produced this really radical legislation. For example, it's not going to let people, kids under 16 to look at the internet. At the same time as they make it 16-year-olds eligible to vote. So how are they going to get their information? And they're apparently going to ban VPNs as well. Because they know that, whereas you're right, the mainstream media is going to suppress all this stuff. It can't be suppressed on Twitter and on these podcasts and so on.
And you see these
huge numbers that Elon Musk is getting on some of these tweets. This is really driving them crazy.
Because it's an information war, because they understand that, you know, if people understood the consequences of their programs, they'd be against the program. So they basically will institute something like mass immigration, and then they'll say it's illegal to talk about the fact that the immigrants are raping everybody. They want to cover up the negative consequences, so the program keeps continuing. Because they want the negative consequences, in my interpretation. But it's an information war, and they know that they need to control the information flow to control how people vote. And at the end of the day, democracy is really just ruled by the media, since that's the way we, you know, interpret the world around us. And it's the reason they targeted InfoWars, and it's the reason they targeted VDare. Can you tell our viewers, maybe if they're not familiar, what happened to VDare? I mean, it was one of my favorite outlets for a long time. And Letitia James got a beaner upon it. You know, what happened to y'all?
Well, VDare.com was a website that was focused on the immigration issue very narrowly. And I found it at Christmas Eve 1999, we went live. And in 2025, we suspended because we were under attack from New York State Attorney General Letitia James. Unfortunately for us, the pro bono lawyer who set us up was barred, admitted to the bar in New York State, and so he registered in New York State. He did it when George Pataki was the Republican governor, and nobody ever heard of Lawfare. It was in 1999, but because of that, she can come after us, making all kinds of demands for documentation, and so she hit us with these enormous subpoenas and so on. And just complying with these subpoenas alone was financially ruinous to us. But the other problem we had was that if we had, to the extent that we complied with them, she could have gotten the names of our writers and our donors. And most of our writers were pseudonymous because of the Reign of Terror. And both the writers and the donors, had their names been leaked, and she has a practice of leaking things like this, they would have been fired. People's lives would have been ruined because they gave money or donated to us. So we fought it as hard as we could, and we ran up something between $1 and $2 million in legal costs, and we just couldn't sustain it. So we had to suspend the editorial product of VDare.com, although the site is still there, the archives are still there. If you go to VDare.com, you'll see them all, 25 years of immigration patriotism. At the same time, we've been sued. This gets so complicated. One of her thugs, henchmen, gave us a speech to the ADL about the time that she started subpoenas, saying that we know that hate speech, that's us, of course, we're hate speech, is constitutionally protected by the First Amendment. However, he said, there's a way we can get around that by just subpoenaing them to death. Just hitting them with lots and lots of subpoenas and exhausting them financially. And that's exactly what he did. So for the last year or so, we've been trying to get some court to pay attention to this. But it proved to be very difficult. The New York State courts are completely corrupt and won't pay attention to it. And we've been having a lot of trouble trying to get the federal courts to pay attention to it too. In the meantime, she's charged both the foundation, the VDare Foundation, and Lydia and myself personally with all kinds of, They're basically highly technical violations to do with, did we get enough people, did the board vote on this and did the board vote on that and so on. Of course, we're a tiny organization, so it's like with the Heritage Foundation or something, you know, that with very elaborate internal procedures and so on. And that's continuing. We were just working on discovery last night, to make all kinds of discovery demands, wanting all our financial documents and so on. And the purpose of it is just to bleed us personally to death. And as well as the foundation.
And you're not accused of actually committing a crime, right? I mean, this is all just about your
It's not a crime, the civil violations. But she's told the press release says that we misappropriated money. When you actually look at this, that there's no money that went to us. She said we spent $1 million to buy a castle. But $1 million was to buy the castle, and you've been there, Harrison, was spent by the foundation, which owned the castle. We didn't own the castle. We were using it as a conference venue, because we'd had 15 conferences cancelled on us because Antifa would threaten these big hotels, and the big hotels would immediately cave. So it was entirely legitimate expenditure. And her argument is, well, typically she would say, well, did enough board members vote on this, or when you hired somebody to do something, did you have a bidding process and approach enough other people? It's all technicalities based on the legal stuff. She isn't actually, when you look at it, in the charges against us, alleging that we ourselves personally benefit from it financially. That's just what she tells the press. It's to do with the machinations, the details of how you run a 501c3, which are complex. But at the time, we were in compliance, because we actually had people making sure we were in compliance. But of course, it didn't make any damn difference. Just to search the country, and the New York courts will accept it.
She's a complete menace, and of course she got elected on the promise to do exactly this. She's not actually going after real crimes being committed every single day in New York City and state. She's going after people like yourself for things that I doubt any company would survive the level of scrutiny she's subjecting you guys to. But VDARE is survived, but it doesn't matter. As you say, it doesn't matter. They're just trying to destroy the organization.
Well, of course, the huge disappointment is these damn judges.
Right.
She lied to the court, Letitia James, about us buying the castle and living there personally. It was a lie. And we were able to show that it was a lie. But she still repeated to the judge. And the judge simply blocked and pasted, copy and pasted what Letitia James said. She didn't even bother to acknowledge our refutation. That's why Richard Spencer has announced that he's convinced we're guilty of something, you know. And of course he would do anyway, because he's a swine. If you're not used to this kind of thing, as a layman, what goes on with judges and willingness to misrepresent the facts and so on is simply staggering.
Yeah,
simply staggering. They're not calling balls and strikes. They're activists.
Oh, trust us, we know. I mean, we've been subjected
to... Yes, of course.
You know, very much what... And
of course.
It's frustrating because people go, well, there was a trial, and it's like, yeah, it was called a show trial. Of course they go through the process to make it look like what they're doing is legitimate. They're not just going to come out and say, we're shutting this down corruptly. Like, of course they make it look legitimate, and people fall for that. But look in the details, none of this is legitimate. The cases should have never been open. I'm speaking both about InfoWars and VDARE now. We didn't do anything wrong. It's because of what we say, which makes it a blatant violation of the First Amendment, that I know has really done a number to y'all's organization, which is an incredible organization. You guys were right 25 years ago when you started, even more now. And of course we're seeing that fruit borne out. I think if you can buy a castle for under $2 million, I mean, you should deserve some sort of reward for a real estate acumen or something. That castle is very
55 acres and 3 cottages. Yeah, that's right.
That's an investment right there. That's a tourist spot. But it's just such a shame what they've done to y'all. And I'm just glad that you're continuing to fight the mission that you've been fighting. Again, my guest is Peter Brimelow. Follow him at Peter Brimelow on X, peterbrimelow.com. And his new book, Alien Nation, can be found on Amazon. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mr. Brimelow.
Thanks so much, Harrison. Come and see us soon.
I would love to. I'll stay in your castle before Letitia James steals it from you, the witch. Thank you, everybody, for being here with us. We will see you tomorrow.
that I've had since Alex was born is almost completely gone after 50, however many years. And my hair is much thicker than it has been. And I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker. And this is brand new.
Turn darker.
And darker.
And I've told the story. My mother never wants to go on TV, but she did last year. Look, your dad was completely bald. I'm not kidding. And now all this hair is coming in. And hair that was gray started, she showed me at the restaurant. She said, it's coming in brown. It is buy one, get one free until tomorrow night at midnight central at thealexjonesstore.com. You've been on colostrum now 2 months.
I know.
And we have the very best at thealexjonesstore.com. And I'm serious. So. Mom, you got to listen. The products are amazing.
Well, this one, like I said, I don't do testimonials. There's a lot of good products. But this is the first one that I can go, whoa, it really.
Tell us what happened.
I have been on colostrum for about 2 or 3 months, and a back problem that I've had since Alex was born is almost completely gone after 50, however many years. And my hair is much thicker than it has been. And I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker. And this is brand new.
Turn darker. Yes, ChatGPT, what it's known to do. Upper respiratory tract infections and symptoms reduction. Attenuation of exercise-induced immune suppression. Antiviral and antibacterial effects. Stopping leaky gut. Support for gastrointestinal disorders, which is the whole body. Enhanced recovery and reduced inflammation. Metabolic health, wound healing, and tissue repair. It is bovine colostrum. It is buy one, get one free at thealexjonesstore.com. And it funds the Second American Revolution worldwide.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.